Okay, it's 3 minutes after one, and I'll call the meeting to order. We have a...
We're missing Don.
We have six of the seven planning commissioners. Vice Chair Michael Pereskevich on my left, myself, Jim Dedes, Marty Seitz, Chuck McKinney, and Mike Harmer. And I invite you to join me in the Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
So the first order of business is to approve the minutes from our last two meetings, and I'm quite happy to do this either one at a time or together, but I would look for a motion or motions to approve them with minor editorial typographical changes.
Yeah, I make a motion that we approve the meeting's minutes from the meeting of May 10th, 2014. And in fact, I don't have any minor edits as well as understand the overall content.
But if you were to include that, then if when I'm
including any minor edits that people make.
Well, sure, or type of correction of typographical clerical.
Typographical.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Any further discussion, in particular any edits or typos? Or then all in favor?
Yeah.
Aye.
Aye.
And opposed? The
chairman, all of the
fine.
Yeah, so will I.
And for the minutes for June 7th?
I'll make a motion that we approve the minutes of the Planning Commission meeting of the date June 7th, 2014. That was sent to us by the chairman of the Planning Commission, Chairman King, I think probably 10 days ago, something like that.
With the same caveat, please.
And including any minor edits or typographical errors that we might have identified. In fact, I do have a few typographical.
And a second?
Well, I don't know if this comes into play now, and I just would like to rethink the wording and some of the comments that were
sure.
made. And this was due to, I think, a letter we received that kind of made me backtrack a little bit and think about the nature of the meeting and how it went.
So if you second his, then we'll let you.
Okay, I'll second it then.
Fine. And so, Mike.
Okay. That meeting was kind of a very open meeting where the floor was kind of open at all times to people to make comments and come forth, and we welcomed that. I think that was good, but it was kind of hard to maintain a balance for me of who was for, who was against, how long they were there, what they were thinking about, and things like that. And I thought that, and we were allowing it to happen, that's fine. Several people had or took more of an opportunity to speak than others. Others, gave their opinion and thoughts and kind of sat down, and others decided it was time to get back up and talk again, which is fine in that type of a meeting. So I think when we say there was strong, almost unanimous sentiment among the 60 to 70 residents that came, that would be, in my opinion, maybe a little subjective or different.
So we can tone that down.
Tone that down a little bit. Because it was a pretty open meeting, and there are some people who want to make sure that their point gets across, and that's fine. They would like to stand up once, twice, or three times, where others stood up once, and it kind of like, I couldn't get the balance or the real flavor of who was there.
Did you have some suggested language, or do you want me to just wordsmith that? And
why don't you just resubmit it?
Okay.
I made the motion. I would recommend the same thing. I think that, I think what Michael described is my sentiment. And I think we had some input in the last week to the commissioners regarding the minutes. And I think that I would be happy if the chairman would actually accept the maybe opportunity or responsibility to go back and include or at least consider some of the comments that we received. I know some of the comments I didn't agree with and probably would not put in there, would not change the wording, but with it, at the consideration of the chairman, I think I'd be happy to do that. I'd be welcome to do that. Now, somebody else could do it as well, and it doesn't need to be the chairman.
Well, I am also the secretary, I think. And
okay. All right.
So, unless you want to be.
Unless you want to be.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, there's two things. One is I can listen to the testimony. I have listened to the testimony that's on the website, and so I understand what the meeting was about. Number two, I wasn't at the meeting.
You weren't, yeah. So. No, I will be glad to do that, and I mean, I was sensitive to that issue too, and I think we need to just, you know, basically remove the words "nearly unanimous" and in both cases, and maybe add that there was a very engaged discussion. I mean, there were a lot of ideas, and
I'd certainly be happy to give you my edits.
There were a lot of input, and so well, I'll, yeah. You know, if I, you would
I
like, I can
looking at the time
that.
Frame. I mean, if we were to approve this today, we're way, I won't say way ahead of schedule, but certainly it's unusual to get the minutes this quickly after the meeting. It's 3 weeks after the meeting, and then look for approval right away. We just approved the May 10th meeting minutes, and that's about right. That's about 2 months after the first meeting.
Well, that's because we didn't have a quorum at the last meeting, so we couldn't approve.
Oh, there you go. That's it.
So now, we generally do approve them at the next meeting.
Okay. Can I ask just a point of order? Since there wasn't a quorum at this meeting, it really wasn't, then how does that fit into an official planning commission meeting? It really was more like a town meeting.
Well, it was a meeting.
It was a meeting,
you know, that we took input and.
Right. No, I'm just. I guess the question is, how can the planning commission vote on it when there wasn't a quorum? I mean, I can't.
Basically,
there was no meeting. Okay. But this is the information that we
so
gathered.
So it's just a summation.
It's a summation of the information.
Well, I agree with that interpretation in that regard. It is the chairman's.
So would you like this to maybe to reflect that this is not official?
Yeah, I think that
minutes,
would
but this is a chair summary of the.
I think that would be and, a fair
I think
way.
That'd be fine.
Yeah,
I think that'd be fine.
Then I don't need your approval on this.
You don't need to approve it. I withdraw my motion.
You don't need.
That's exactly right.
Okay, I will
make a point of order.
I will list this as the chair's summary.
Yeah, I think you did that already. Chair's meeting.
And I will, but I will address this. Near unanimous, and I was asked to point out that in fact we didn't have a quorum, and
yeah.
So I will explicit, you know, I assume since, you know, if you know there's seven members and three members were there, then I will take care
you
of that.
Your,
as well.
Your opening does say there wasn't a quorum.
Okay.
Yeah, so I appreciate the work, and I read it, and I understood. I think I understood quantitatively what people
yeah.
thought
yeah.
about.
Yeah. Okay. So that's already taken care of.
Mm-hmm. But it won't be an official.
Right. But I feel in fairness to the people who came,
okay.
That we need to at least have a
sure. Absolutely. No, I find it very valuable.
Good. Thank you. Okay. So the next item on the agenda is to. Discuss zoning for the neighborhood residential district, and Tim Arnold and Bill Colburn had been working together and working with us, and Tim's here, and so do you want to tell us where you are? And
sure, my name's Tim Arnold. I live in 207 Jersey. We bought in November of 99, so this is our 14th summer. And what Bill and I did, a draft of it was, I think it's already been posted to the website. And I sent David an update, but I don't think he has a chance to post it yet. And we were asked to assist in writing a little statement that represented the architectural character of the northern part of Dewey Beach, roped by the sea. And I guess as a part of the comprehensive plan, there's supposed to be that sort of description for each of the neighborhoods. Is that the case?
That is the case.
So we've begun working on that, and we've snapped some photos of the houses and done some research. And I can share my email. So if anyone else has, you know, longer historical knowledge, that'd be great to incorporate. But we thought the three kind of defining characteristics were the pine trees, the beach houses. And the third kind of characteristic that we focused on was actually the lower floor to area ratio, the lower bar, the modest size of the majority of the homes. And I was able to kind of learn a little bit about the original development, which is now worked by the C Realty Company. And so we described the models that they offered and talked a little bit about that. And that's kind of where we are. And I have a copy that people can take a look at and again.
So there was copies of the first draft from last month in the back of the room. I don't know if there's still some.
We have
an extra copy up here. If anybody, this is mine.
And any input? There's probably some typos.
It looks like this.
You can, if you'd like to come up, you can have a copy.
Yes. But any input?
But it is on the town's website.
It is.
Yes.
The
current
draft is on the town's website.
Yes. This is everything that we were looking at today is on the website. And if you look at the event calendar for today's date and click it, you'll find all the documents.
Okay. So do you want to go into further detail or
whatever you're prepared to?
Well, the other thing that we've been talking about, Bill and I, Bill Coleman, couldn't be here today, is I think one real concern. I should say I practice architecture in Washington, D.C., and oftentimes I think people are surprised what the current zoning is. And then we're with by the sea, where most of the lots are about 50 by 100. The current floor to area ratio is a ratio of 1. So you're allowed.
Is that conditioned space or unconditioned space?
I think it's conditioned space.
It's both. So it's conditioned space, but it also. And.
So it includes porches then?
It includes covered porches. So if you're screened or covered, then it includes that even though it's not conditioned. Okay. If it's not screened and covered, then it's...
Like a deck.
It's not, an open deck is not, but a deck with a roof on it is.
Yes, gotcha.
And
garages are excluded.
Okay.
So that's actually kind of an issue that we thought that was something that might need to be thought. But just in some little bit of research that we did, That is actually a far denser ratio than all of our neighboring beach communities. And it's actually a denser situation than the, correct me if my term is wrong, it's a denser ratio than what's allowed in the multifamily parts of the city. And I think that what's happened is that in the past,
the density, you're talking, the floor area ratio.
Right, you're correct. The setbacks are looser in our northern part of the area than they are in
looser. What do you mean by that?
The front yard. There is a table in the back. There's some copies that have the zoning table. Looks
the,
like
the
that.
The only setback that is
the front yard setback.
Front yard.
Right.
The rear yard is actually more restrictive.
It's 12 feet
versus 10
rather than 10, yeah. And it's 22 feet rather than
the 20. Our district is 1.5.
Okay, so I was saying
the FAR in our district is 1.0.
Right.
Which is a new concept in zoning for Dewey Beach. There was no FAR restriction prior to the comprehensive plan in the new zoning districts when they made the NR more restrictive.
I'm sorry, can you... I was getting some input from the vice chair and I missed the first...
In the RR district, the FAR is 1.5. Correct?
RR
is 1.2.
No, it's 1.2.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and the NR is 1.0.
Right.
But prior to the comprehensive plan and the new zoning districts, there was no FAR.
That's incorrect. That's incorrect.
I've never seen FAR in our book.
There has always been a FAR, and it's been 1.2 for... Since the mid-90s.
But you're correct in that with the
they made the NR district more restrictive after the new districts were formed.
Right.
So the one change that was made in 2009 following the comprehensive development plan that was passed in 2007, the zoning code that was modified to implement the plan that was approved in 2009 took the FAR, the floor area ratio, in the neighborhood residential from 1.2 to 1.0 to make it slightly less than what it is in the resort residential and what it was in the neighborhood residential prior to 2000.
That's part of what happened. It had been made more restrictive in recent years.
But we did relax.
But we also went from you could build to three stories to two and a half stories in the neighborhood residential.
It became more restrictive in recent time.
But we did reduce the parking. We increased the parking.
And excluded garages and
that. It's even more restrictive.
Depending on which way you look at it.
My first question I was going to ask is what. Are you done your presentation, Tim?
Sure.
I don't want to cut you off if you got more to add to
most
it.
Most of the work that I did is in.
Okay, did you update? You said you sent me something last night. Did you update?
I filled in. I attached the photographs and.
Okay, so I will post that to the website under this meeting as well.
I think this is
the draft. I've got several questions for Tim. If I can go with.
Sure.
First of all, I attend a lot of these meetings before, and I just don't know. And I'm all ears. What mistake or change has been made to bring forth this discussion? I've never really been told if the residents have sent in requests or what change or mistake has been made
just to look at the
prompt this and art district discussion we're having.
Well, I don't know.
David, I'll second that because I've been wondering.
Okay, there are at least three drivers for this. I mean, the simple driver is that the town commissioner has asked us to address this.
Okay.
One of the new town commissioners, David Jasinski, has taken as his primary focus zoning in the neighborhood residential district, and he thinks that it doesn't protect the character of the neighborhood.
Okay.
And so he wanted us to take a look at it. The second thing is that there's concern that has been voiced over the past couple of years that now that the leases are, a lot of leases are coming due, properties are being sold, changing hands, leases being extended, people are now investing in those properties more, and there's a concern that if you were to build to the maximum permitted by the current code, that would negatively affect both the character and property values in that district. And I think what we heard at the last meeting was sentiment from a lot of people that even with a FAR of 1 at 5,000 square feet, that is probably larger than that homes like that would overshadow the other homes.
Some of the people felt that.
And again, we do exclude from the FAR open decks, so you can have a second floor deck and a third floor deck that don't count for the FAR and don't count for garages. And so, so that's two reasons, and there was a third that slips my memory.
I believe there was a concern about the 2.5 story. And what exactly did that mean?
Oh, yeah. So there was this issue of, what does 2.5 story mean? The zoning, the 2009 zoning code limits development in the neighborhood residential to 2.5 stories, 35 feet. But the definition for 2.5 stories was never implemented, so that was part of the reason we were looking at the definitions. There's been a lot of, I've gotten a lot of input from people about how there's concerns, both about the scale of development in the neighborhood residential district increasing inappropriately, and concern that the current zoning code conceives of the possibility of a planned residential development, and there is some concern that that might have an adverse impact on the neighborhood as well. So that would be part of this whole consideration.
Thank you. So from what I've heard, a lot of it we're considering the character of the neighborhood and how the present zoning and so forth is affecting the character of the neighborhood.
Okay.
Before I start, I've been here for quite a few years, but I don't know, are there any owners or representatives of Rehoboth by the Sea here who actually aren't? I don't want to ask any questions, I just want to know right now.
You can ask anyone.
I will. I will.
We need to talk
I just want to know, thank you. Okay, I have to just talk to you a bit about your...
What's your name?
Carter Wilson.
I wanted to ask you a question for you.
Oh, we'll talk.
Mike, I am not representing Rehoboth by the Sea in any way, but I am part of the family.
Okay. Thanks for coming, because I really wanted to finally see somebody who's here. just want to talk to you about your draft. Here you are. And I'm probably looking at this more from an engineering point of view than an architect. So I'm going to just go down. In your first couple paragraphs, when you talk about the Rehoboth of the Sea neighborhood and you give the boundaries of it, I think that would be more appropriate if you said that was the NR district. Because if I'm not mistaken, the Rehoboth by the Sea properties go beyond what you describe it as far as the boundaries.
Okay.
So I think to make it clear,
that's correct.
You refer that to the NR district, not the Rehoboth by the Sea district. And if I'm wrong on any of these, please let me know, because again, I'm just on the knowledge I have. So it goes beyond your district. In your three major defining characteristics of the community, number one, your pine tree canopy coverage. I've looked on Google and I've actually printed Google out, and I have some opinions about the comments you made on that. I'll get to that in your next paragraph. And the mid-century beach cottage architecture and the low floor area, if I was writing this report, I would add some other defining characteristics of the area.
Such as?
Well, the properties from east of Route 1, basically there aren't any trees on there that are covering the rooftops. The canopies don't cover it. I mean, you can look on Google. They have trees. They're mostly in the backyards or in the front streets, but they're not covering the rooftops. That takes out at least 50% of the NR district. And since 1962, I guess, when the major building boom started after the big hurricane and a lot of these houses were built, these buildings are really now only 48, 50, 60-some years old. I don't know if you can consider them historic or not, but they certainly have character. But there's been a lot of different types of houses built, especially on the ocean side of Route 1, that really aren't in line with the character of the original buildings.
Yeah, it says that in here. It says that the...
Well, you said there's three driving characteristics. And I think there's probably another one that I would kind of say the multi-style construction has been added to the area since 1962. There's a lot of different building types, you know, especially on the ocean and the ocean, near the oceanfront cottages of buildings. These are just my comments. Going down to the we have townhouses there now, you know, just a small group of them, but we do have them. We have the complex there, we have buildings that are on pilings, we have buildings that have been converted and large buildings and things like that. So there are other defining characters of this community. And then the paragraph said the first characteristic is self-evident. A quick look on Google Maps and satellite may reveals as many lots in the house roofs are almost totally obscured. I've looked at that and I came up with an evaluation of maybe 20%, 25% of them were totally obscured. Not, you know, I wouldn't say many if it was me writing this report. I'm not giving you any indication which way I want to go with this thought of the character. I'm just trying to, you know, put my perspective into this character, up to this, you know, what was written here. And then in that paragraph, you continue to say, driving north in the community after Route 1 split, one can also feel the change dramatically. More trees, slower traffic, all residential, lower roof lines. I agree. then you say this effect is reversed heading south towards the center of Dewey. I would like to know what you mean by the word effect in that paragraph. What's the effect?
Well, the kind of the psychological effect. When you're heading north towards town, there's a sense of it being busier and livelier, and there's more street traffic, and there's businesses and bars and restaurants and more activity, and that elicits a certain sort of feeling that can be very positive. And then when you're heading the other way, it gets quieter and calmer, and there's less street traffic, and there are businesses, and there are more trees.
Okay, I was just trying to get more out of that word, but that's fine. That's fine. We do have a couple quiet streets south of the intersection.
Yeah, it wasn't the.
Okay, I'm going to move on because I don't want to get stuck on this.
All right,
I'm not going to get stuck on that. I've already noted that I don't think these buildings could be considered historic because they're really not that old. They do have character. A lot of the things I'm seeing on Google and Street View from Google are trees, but they're also bushes, things like that. So I just have one or two more thoughts I want to get out. I've also reviewed, I drew the building envelope on what would be the NR zone versus the RR zone and the square footages and things like that. So I'm pretty well prepared to talk about that if it comes up. Also, I just want to, we'll talk about that later. That's the only comment I want to make on that.
Any input from members of the public on Carter?
Yeah.
Carter Wilson.
Carter Wilson, 20 Chicago Street, I just built a brand new house there. I'm a builder in Montgomery County, Maryland, Bethesda Chevy Chase, and teardowns, infill. I represent the Building Industry Association concerning these issues, trees, zoning standards, and the zoning rewrite of Montgomery County, if anybody's familiar with that, for the Building Industry Association and the legislation that the County Council proposed. So I've been dealing with these issues. I've been building houses for 30 years. I've been dealing with these particular issues you all are talking about for the last 10 years or more even. So I've been through this process. And one thing, trees is an issue we can deal with. It's a renewable resource, and by making a requirement to have someone plant a tree or two trees on a lot is not unreasonable. If it's a reasonable requirement, I think it's a good thing. So the canopy, tree canopy, I don't think is really that big of an issue that some of you may think it is, but I've been through this and I really don't believe it is. But trying to address the character issue of trying to maintain the character of Dewey Beach is something you can't legislate. Okay, because your definition of character may be different from mine. Okay, what I see over there is a bunch of old houses that are deteriorating. They need to either be torn down or renovated. And it's old architecture, outdated, and doesn't meet today's standards that people want. So legislating character or architecture is the wrong way to go.
I was asked by the Planning Commission to make an attempt at describing the character of the north end of town.
Right.
No, so I understand that, but
there's nothing legislative about this at all. This is just
an attempt to... I know, but I think their intent, it seems to me that the intent of the town is to maybe legislate architecture or maintain the character. That's what they're that's what they're talking about. I'm saying...
Well, I don't know if that's the case.
I don't know. I'm just...
Yeah. No, I mean, from my point of view, I think we asked you to do exactly what you did, and that is to kind of describe it in your terms. And I appreciate what you did. I think it's very valuable. I appreciate Mr. Periskevich's input in saying that there's a variety and multi styles. I think that's a good description and maybe goes into your comment a little bit. But it certainly is not a document that me as a commissioner would intend to recommend to anybody that we make it a basis of law or anything like that. It's background information.
No, I know yours is just a report, but it's, yeah.
But I think
I was under the impression the intent was to address character.
Well, the intent is to some extent to define. The intent is to somehow, to some extent, to ensure that the zoning will protect the character of the neighborhood.
So there's legislative character, right?
But to that effect, can I just say that this is from the first paragraph of the summary meeting of last time. You say the sense of the testimony was that this district needs to be downzoned. Those are your words.
We're talking about two different reports.
No, it's like the character of North End.
So,
and that's theory.
I'm just saying that's. If that's your intent, you're thinking about that. I'm just saying. We're still
in the information gathering stage.
Good.
I sense that the overwhelming thought articulated at the meeting was that 5,000 square feet is probably too large. That if everybody were to build to 5,000 square feet, that would reduce property values in that neighborhood.
Well, can I talk to
that effect?
Maybe I should say
that.
I'll let you
talk. So, Carter, please, go ahead. I mean, we're still listening.
Yeah, I think it's great.
And
John, I hope we continue to have these meetings. I mean, it took us years to get through this. It took us 3 years to change the zoning standard for infill development. So, plenty of input in this. Another thing is, as far as trees go, you don't want to design a house around a tree because one day that tree is going to die. So we don't want to go there. I think what we have today, you got FAR of one. So you can build up to 5,000 square feet of conditioned or unconditioned space. In Montgomery County, for example, 5,000 square feet lot, you have 30% lot coverage. Is 1,500 square feet. So your footprint can only be 1,500 square feet. So two stories is 3,000 square feet, right? So so you're a lot more than that. I think if you change the FAR a little bit, lower it a little bit, possibly like 0.75, is a reasonable amount of space for that lot. Maybe you move in your rear setback from a 12 to change that to 18. Okay, so you restrict the space. If you make your footprint too small, and you've got to leave it 8 on both sides, because you don't want a bunch of skinny, narrow houses. If you make your footprint too small, you're going to restrict the architecture. You want a bigger footprint so you can have more diversity of architecture in new homes or renovations. So you don't want to make it too restrictive.
But there's nothing in this report about restricting it.
I think he's just making some comments.
They're talking about changing the zoning.
Yeah.
That's what I'm addressing. I'm not addressing your report, sorry.
Yeah.
All right? You're an architect, right? Well, that's kind of familiar with what I'm talking about. So diversity of architecture is what you want. You don't want to restrict porches. You want people to build front porches, right? Have screen porches, that's the beach. So we don't want to restrict that. So I think you're close, but if you go too far, it's going to be a big problem. It's going to be a big problem for property owners. You can possibly devalue properties in here if you have way too many restrictions on these.
Good, thank you. Any other comments?
Mr. Wilson's, you talk about even, maybe bringing the FAR down a little bit, but they've already done that. They took it down to 1.0, so why are we even having this discussion? The commissioner asked, we discuss it, but,
we brought it from 1.2 to 1.0,
exactly.
But as Mr. Wilson said.
I think that he said that's still unusual.
It is.
Rehoboth's 0.6, and.
I really don't know of any single family home community that has an FAR of 1 on 5,000 square foot lots.
It's a little high.
Yeah, well, it's a quarter. I'd say it's at least a quarter high. I think 0.75 would be a reasonable target number. which is 25% larger.
But the thing is, that takes, that just throws out two or three years worth of work that the town did in a public process. They went through this already.
No, I'm not advocating.
We're
going to have to go through this again as it is.
Part of the reason why I was asked to do this is that the comprehensive plan was supposed to include adopting
this. I mean, this is, you know, as a standalone, this is just, you know, helpful to us.
All right. Sorry, David.
Can I ask Mr. Wilson a question?
Yeah.
I've been doing quite a while, and I've been looking at the aerial photos pretty seriously. And the NR district covers a big section of town. And from what I see, there's different areas in the NR district already, different characteristics of certain blocks in certain areas.
Yeah.
And I threw this out to David a little while ago, where a thought would be maybe we should have a different type of a zone. I mean, from the highway to the ocean is clearly different than along the ponds back there. I mean, you've already lost most of your, you know, tree coverages. You know, I'm off the favor of putting street trees in and wherever you can put them in. But it's different already, in my opinion. And to try to restrict that area, basically downzoning it, and the character's already been changed different than the rest of the NR, might be worthwhile thinking about a different zone or different zonings. Chop up the NR.
So why would you chop it up?
Because if you lower the floor ratio, people who want to build close to the beach or build closer to the beach, they want to bring their kids in. They want to put, you know, a lot of children there, a lot of families. And if they can put up a 5,000 square foot house, they might be able to accomplish that. But if they can put anything less than that, you know, it's going to be a problem for them. And being closer to the ocean is usually where these people buy these properties, and they want to do larger families. You get back off the beach, you know, closer to the lakes and things like that, you might get, you know, again, families with different types of people who go along with a level floor area. And it's already changed. If you drive the streets and you look at the aerial, there's a whole mixture of different houses there already. It's already, you know, different than what's along the lake in the back areas there. And I just want your thoughts on that.
I think if you know, the ocean block is certainly more valuable than that block's going.
I mean, I would still keep it all residential, you know, single family homes, but think a little different about the floor area ratio along that area.
Yeah. Well, as time goes on, you know, the ocean block will be developed, and then there'll be less and less property, right? There'll be a shortage of lots as time goes by, and I think that people are going to want those larger homes may be feasible in the second block and third block as time goes on. All these lots, I don't know what the schedule is for when these lots come online, but I'm sure they're not going to put them all on the market at the same time. But
now they all have different expirations, and there's a real national. First of all, the original terms, you know, it happened when somebody bought their house. So even the people who were on the original 60, it spreads over a period of time. And then there's a sizable number that have extended at different times. And there also are lots, as you know, that have been sold off. So it's a real patchwork.
I don't know, when you start doing that, it might get a little complicated. I mean, I think the whole key is to make this thing as simple and as possible. Because it's a really complex issue. There's a lot of issues you've got to deal with. Very complex.
Rick?
I have a few things I'd like to say, but let me just start on adopted one right now. My name's Rick Judge. I live on New Orleans. I have a property on Chesapeake Street where I'm trying to build in the near future. But I've been here since 1950. And in 1950s, even in the early 60s, we had the Bottle and Gork, we had the Boathouse Restaurant. We didn't have 22 bars up and down our streets. We have come through a lot of change in Dewey Beach. It's always going to change. It's always going to grow. going to become more expensive, it's going to become nicer or less nice, depending on your point of view. Downtown Dewey, a lot of people think it's less nice. A lot of money being made in downtown Dewey. But that's besides the point. When the homes were built by DFD, the three models that you referred to, Tim, we call that plywood village. DFD came in with very inexpensive building material, plywood, 2x4s, and they constructed affordable beach cottages for the 60s. That's a long time ago. There are over 400 properties in the neighborhood residential district. I think it's about half and half. I think there's actually more owned in fee and have always been owned in fee than leaseholds, but it's a close mixture. Point is, half the properties up there have always had the right, under old zoning and present zoning, to build their full structure.
Well, you even have the right to do with your, if you have an on-land lease.
Right, but I mean,
Charland.
The point was that we're concerned about the land leases being released and all of a sudden people have the ability to build some big home. And I'm saying there's already half of the properties up there have always had that right.
And well, I always had that right.
Also, I think we're hoping by the sea has sold and re-leased up to 40 properties in the NR. And how many have built large homes?
Two.
There's not a pattern. There's nothing going on up in the North End that needs to be immediately addressed for some great crisis of large homes being built. And to question or start to consider changing the zoning, which was just changed 4 years ago, again, seems way ahead of its time.
What was the last comment, if I were to repeat it, it was something like that. The whole of IC has given long leases to 40 properties in the North Side?
They sold most of them, but they've extended a number of leases to brand new long-term leases, one of which is myself.
And only two of them have been built to 55,000 square foot.
I think it's 16 Chicago. Your house is?
I'm 20.
You're 20?
Yeah, but I'm like 4,000.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying, but sometimes 4,000 is too big.
But those are the two. Those are the two properties you're talking about having built. Okay.
And there's a third one going up on Jersey on the third block now. But you know, there's no massive jump to building 5,000 square foot homes under present zoning. That's my point. And it's been the right to do that by more than half of them for all time. So the big scare about leaseholds being coming due, sell, and everybody's got to build a 5,000 square foot house that'll protect the community, I think is really reaching.
Well, you know, one could take the devil's argument, Rick, and say, well, nobody in this room would build to 5,000 square feet. You know, none of us would build over 3,500. Then why do we need zoning that would let one build over 3,500? There are people in Dewey Beach who have built to the absolute max permitted by the zoning. And there are speculators who come in and build to the absolute max provided by the zoning because somehow they feel that maximizes their personal benefit irregardless of what it does to the community. So
I don't want to see 400, 5,000 square foot houses in the North End. My point is we don't have them. And there's always been the right to do it. Therefore, I'm not sure what you're trying to
Protect.
Is it fair for 16 and 20 in Jersey Street to have 4,000 or 5,000 square foot homes and the rest of us can't?
No, whenever zoning changes,
it changes.
There are people that are happy and people are sad, and there are people that who've gotten under it, get under the wire, and other people who may feel that they are lost. Like whatever that happens, and I guess as I understood it, and I'm no expert in any of this, I was just attempting to get involved in the community and volunteer. But as I understand it, there, you know, as a part of this whole big new comprehensive plan, there was supposed to be kind of a look at the zoning.
I mean, when the last...
The new date, 2017, which they have to update. And I'm not a big advocate. I'm not saying that we need to necessarily have some radical change in the zoning. I mean, personally, I feel like 0.75 would be reasonable, which would allow a 4,000 square foot house on a 5,000 square foot lot.
Conditions.
Yeah,
you need to differentiate that because porches should not be part of that.
And I agree that porches and decks shouldn't be part of that.
Yeah.
I might disagree with you on the garages, because to me, I
thought... that's a little different issue.
To me, I thought like a garage is a house. It's part of the house. You're housing it.
But there are some benefits to the community.
Having the cars off the
of
street.
Having the cars off the street.
But I don't think
if you take a .75 and do the math, that's just as conditioned space and have porches not included in that, that almost takes you to an FAR 1.
Right.
And everybody that builds a house down here is going to have a front porch, typically.
So we're almost already in the same point.
That's
the
point.
Is that at 5,000 square feet, excluding all the unconditioned space, we're really allowing bigger houses.
Yeah.
Under the current, 5,000 square feet
is all space.
Right.
Right.
But it includes porches.
No, it doesn't.
It does. It includes a covered porch. So
a covered porch, but not decks.
Right.
But not open
porches
decks.
Porches is a big item down here.
Okay, so
with the building envelope that's there now, the two-story house you can only put up 4,760 square feet.
Right, 2,340 is your buildable footprint if you do the setbacks.
Yeah.
So really, the setbacks.
2,000. I'm getting 2,380.
Yeah, something like that. But the setbacks actually don't allow you to reach the FAR.
So you can't get unless you put 200 some square feet in the attic area.
Well, then you can do two and a half floors. So you
right.
can have a
right.
If you use your attic or set a half floor, you can get to 5,000 square feet. But if you just put up a standard two-story house, you can't get to 5,000 square feet.
Right. And then part of that is porches as well.
So okay. Okay.
If I could say one more thing, personally, my only concern with our current zoning situation, my personal only concern is the rear yard setback.
Why?
I think 12 feet is way too tight for the rear yard.
Well, you need that to get you.
It should be bigger. It should be, to me, it should be increased.
What's 70 times 34? That's your box, right?
Right. No, I'm just saying. I think the rear yard, personally, should be bigger than 12 feet.
70 times 34 is your box.
But Carter, you said the same thing.
It's 2380.
2380.
You said the same thing earlier, right?
I thought
12
is a little tight, but
my concern is that the 12-foot setback means that if you have back-to-back neighbors who do max out, the height of their house can be a third taller than the distance between their two houses. 12 and 12 is 24, and you're allowed 35 feet.
Yeah.
So if you have back-to-back neighbors,
24 feet apart.
Right, and their houses are almost a third taller than the 24 feet. And that's actually a spatial experience I think most people haven't had in single-family home neighborhoods.
Well, 5,000 square foot lot neighborhoods, yeah, certainly do. But it's tight.
That's kind of that's fine. I mean, I work in D.C., I live downtown. But I think that is a very different character than what we have had in the neighborhood.
Yeah. Marcia?
Introduce
yourself.
Marcia Schick. We have a 60-year land lease. We have several land leases, properties that are going to expire between 9 and 12 years. And we have some fee simple property. So we kind of run the gamut. And I think I spoke last time for the record that when I read the minutes and it said the overwhelming majority of people were in favor of downzoning the North End, I didn't feel like that was an accurate picture, because I was at that meeting and there were about 5 or 7 people that talked, and it seemed like the overwhelming majority of people in the room were on land leases that were going to expire in 9 to 12 years, shorter expiration. So those people aren't going to be stakeholders. And if you're talking about, my concern is that when you're holding these public meetings, that it can't be in the summertime when everybody is not, most of the property owners aren't here and can't attend. But that group that you surveyed were people who don't own their land, don't own a more than a 9 or 10 year interest, and are looking at influencing zoning for a 2017 comp plan. I just find that is not a fair assessment of what everybody wants. I think you've really got to make sure you've got fee simple property owners in the room who knows what's going on. And I know Mark sent out the last letter, but it's very difficult for most of these people if they're renting their homes to be here in the summer for these kind of meetings. The second thing is, I'm not sure why we're focusing on the north end right now, and why we've split it off if the plan is in 2017, and why isn't it part of the overall look again, maybe in 2015-16 or 16-17 with all the other zones. And, you know, my house we live in is the old traditional style, and I have no intention of building anything near more than a modern bedroom and kitchen. So I don't see the threat up there. We love the style. It's plywood walls. We like living in that neighborhood. And I see a lot of people having those places, and I don't see this perceived risk of explosion of houses in the north end. The only other comment I wanted to make was, I am not an advocate of downzoning. I am an advocate of looking at what this gentleman talked about with the backyard setbacks, because I think it is a real canyon effect when you're 24 feet from your neighbor on either side, 35 feet up. In fact, we just purchased a property for the mere reason that we knew the three properties around it had 20 years before their land leases were sold, and it protected us from that canyon effect for 20 years. But it is impossible.
No, just so you know, I really appreciate what you're saying, but you're not protected because people have land leases.
No, I know that. Most people won't develop on their land lease because it's not worth the value if you have 12 years.
Well, but people who have extended.
Have 60.
Right. People who have 60.
But I can tell you, I would not want to sit in my backyard, which is 30-something feet.
We don't need to. We don't need to have this discussion.
So 12 and 12 and 35 feet up is like walking through a downtown area, and that's just something I think we could take a better look at.
But just so you understand,
Len,
if we do increase...
No, hey. Thanks, Jim. We're going to close this out in 2 minutes.
Len. I kind of agree with what Marcia is doing. I definitely agree with what Marcia's saying. I'm a landowner. We have three pieces of property on Cullen Street, which I think Cullen Street is the prettiest street in Dewey, in my opinion. A lot of it's own land. We own it. We live there full time. The one house that my wife grew up in was built in 1948, long before the plywood houses went up. So that's something else that you may want to consider. There are some houses there that are even more historic than
that. Oh yeah, I mentioned that in the report.
The Bob Duncan's house on the corner across from Pipers.
That was one of the original. In the update, that specifically mentioned.
But at the time when my wife's growing up, there was nothing down there. Out there except sand dunes, and they actually stole most of the sand and leveled it off behind Cullen going towards Chicago. That's why it's a little lower. You went through planning and came up with a comprehensive plan and zoning, 4 years ago, whatever it was, and now it's not good enough? I don't understand, because it downzoned it then to go to 2.5 story. The setbacks were changed, but the cumulative front and back was still left at 30 feet. I think you had to have a little bit more in the front and then less in the back. Now, you may want to think about doing that, but I think the idea was to open up the street space so you didn't get a canyon effect along the street. I'm worried about my property rights. Over half of our net wealth, well over half, is invested in property in Dewey Beach. And I'm scared that if you start messing with it, those values are going to go down. The value of property in Dewey, I've been told there's a 20% discount as it is. We worked through some numbers last night at the town meeting and actually the public safety meeting. If you take a 20% discount on 1,800 properties in Dewey, and we'll say an average of $1 million, just to make it round, you're talking 200 million dollars discount in Dewey Beach because of the address name.
And as compared to the neighbors? Is
that that's right? Compared to Rehoboth Beach. Now, that is something to think about. The other thing is the public safety issue. And that ties in with the land values. And I'm becoming intimately familiar, unfortunately, with public safety. There are group houses in the north end. Some of these houses that are...
Well, Len, I think you're going a little...
Well, the cottages...
Far afield of...
I don't think so. Because some of those cottages are... Knowing that there's not much lease time left, they're just dumping kids in. And that becomes a public safety issue. That lowers the land prices if you have a public safety problem. There's one other point, I forgot what it was.
Sorry.
Setbacks?
Well, okay, well, I mean, I wish that we all had a crystal ball so that we could actually tell what set of parameters in the zoning would increase or optimize property values, and you know, I think that's a...
It sounds like a lot of people are concerned about the rear yard setback, and I just think it's important to note if we were to increase, I think people get concerned about the word down zoning, because I think if you're down zoning, it's taking away your property values because you're reducing what you can build. But I think that maybe what we should be talking about is just kind of massaging the zoning. Because I think that it sounds like a lot of people have the same concern about the rear setback. So it's not like, I don't think a lot of people want to have any sort of a, you know, historic commission and say that
right.
You can't change your beach house. I don't think anyone's really saying that. But I think that it sounds like there are a lot of people who are concerned about the setbacks and what the neighborhood would be like if everyone maxed out their setbacks. I think that that's a concern that you'll find with someone in a 6-year lease and a 43-year lease or someone who's freehold. I think that's just something that a lot of people are concerned about.
David, can I make one more point? The I would like to see more nice houses up in that area. Right now, there's summer cottages. You only have summer residents. I'd like to see it turn into a full-time community where you had nice houses built that are winterized. You get a better clientele of the renters coming in, and that's where the public safety comes in, than you do in some of the places that are some of them becoming more run down. If you upgrade the housing, it's in Dewey's best interest.
Okay.
Are you thinking of closing out the...
I'm closing out this...
Could I make one strong or important comment on the intent of the half-story?
Yeah.
I think that's pretty much very much in terms of the zoning of the neighborhood residential. The half-story, I'm glad we have an architect in the room maybe can help on this. The intent for putting a half-story into the neighborhood residential was to keep box houses with flat roofs, rooftop decks out of the neighborhood residential. It was not to restrict what you could do within that half story. And a half story, in most architectural definitions I have read, is building within the roof lines. There are no side walls in a half story. The Cape Cod is a half story with gable dormers across it to allow light and living space. And I don't think the intent was ever to restrict the use of the half story. But the definitions that have not been adopted are limiting your gable space to less than 50% of your floor space, which in my little 2,500 square foot house I want to build on Chesapeake means I can't have the living space in my bedroom and bathroom on that half story. Unless I build a huge, huge house that has all extra room in that half story that makes it livable. So you're working kind of against the premise of smaller homes by restricting gables and square footage for the half story. Half story roof lines on roof lines make an architectural attractive home. It doesn't take away because you have three or four dormers in your half story that are more than 50% of your floor space. you're living in a pitched architectural design group, half story.
And I don't know.
I depend on architectural guidelines concerning that because I've never seen a restricted area.
Hmm?
Definition for next month.
Yeah, definition for next month, but.
I
appreciate that. I mean, I would like to task you with creating a drawing. It's not clear to me that you could exceed 50% of the floor area of a half story with gables, unless essentially the whole roof line was one massive gable. But that would be an interesting exercise to go and draw it out.
Why you would restrict that?
Before we talk any, that's not really on the table today. And I think before we even have this discussion in the future, somebody has to see whether or not the language that was put forward in 2009 is even if you wanted to do that, if it's feasible. It's not clear to me that it is. Did you have a?
Well, it kind of crosses the lines again.
Okay, so we're going
to
move on.
I wanted to follow up with Rick.
No, we're going to move on because. Okay. Thank you for input on this. We will come back to this in September.
David, is it August or September?
This particular issue is. We're going to have a joint meeting with the town commissioners in August at which we will talk about our progress.
The northern, you're talking about what we talked about.
The neighborhood residential district. We will briefly discuss in a joint meeting with the town commissioners, but we will come back to a public hearing format probably in September, second Saturday in September, and reach out for more input.
Before we close this out, I'd like to make one comment.
Sure.
Not picking on Tiff, but I heard language of, it seems like a lot of people are concerned about the rear setback distance. And I don't think we have a lot of people present. No, I'm getting that opinion. I think it's falls back a little bit under your summary with a strong language. So I just want to.
But I think, I think we have some people in the room who are opposed to, air quotes, down zoning, who are in favor of increasing the rear setbacks.
A few.
Should we just poll? Is it most people who are here?
No. Well, I mean, we've got three people, and, so.
Three out of 10 is 30% right there.
Well,
the others haven't voted. So.
Well, the other people haven't spoken.
I don't think we're voting.
No. There are 3,500 property owners in Dewey Beach, or voters in Dewey Beach, and, so whether three or four, that's, okay, so the next issue has to do with floodplain management, and what we need to do as a commission is to make a recommendation to the town commissioners on a floodplain management ordinance. And I believe I would like to walk out of this meeting with having vetted this entire draft and have direction to doing a final draft that we can vote on maybe at our August meeting and pass on to the town commissioners.
Yeah, I think Mike did a lot of work on this.
Mike did a lot of work on this, and we got a lot of input from. So what I did was I took Mike's input, and there are a number of comments, some of which are labeled DB. And you might ask who DB is, and that's really these are, that's Mike or Dewey Beach. It says, whereas your community, and I put in Dewey Beach or things like that. So those changes are, just clarifications that came along because we have to, customize this for Dewey Beach. Then there are comments that are DK, which are, my comments, and some of them were comments to Denrick, and they got removed and answered. And then this RCQ is Rebecca Quinn, who is a contractor.
What are we supposed to be looking at this?
With Denver.
What we're looking at
RCQ.
Right, is this document. And RCQ is Rebecca Quinn, who's a contractor for DENREC to help the Sussex County communities get their floodplains through FEMA review.
So I printed this out, with, I guess, which was posted online.
That should be the same thing.
Okay.
But you printed it out without the comments.
Okay.
And I printed it out with the comments so people could see the changes. You might want to comment. We did attend a session with DENREC on this and with a lot of the other beach communities. And, there was a lot of concern regarding this. But at the same time, they pretty much said that it would be to everybody's best interest to accept the FEMA guidelines and make some, what appropriate changes you felt. But
I mean, what happens is if FEMA hasn't approved this by March 1st, everybody in Dewey Beach who gets flood insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program loses their flood insurance.
It's 2015, obviously. March
2015.
Yeah.
So we've got to provide something to the town commissioners who have to approve something, who have to send it to FEMA who has to approve it. As Jim said, we were told that of the 15 communities in Kent County who adopted the FEMA DENREC recommendation, all 15 were approved. Those who wanted to change it weren't, or at least weren't the first time. So, I mean, there is... there is a good reason to adopt to the maximum amount possible to adopt the FEMA, the DENREC recommendation. There is reason to make sure that we incorporate things that are specific to Dewey that we think are important, that we do enforce, that we think are important to continue to enforce, and any other things that we think are important for Dewey, and then we will just deal with them with FEMA as, we will put them forward to FEMA, and FEMA will say okay, or FEMA will say conceptually okay, but change language to this, or they'll say, no. And we can then go around about that. And one thing that was clear to me is that we don't want to put anything in here that we think is going to change. And one of the things that's incorporated in this draft is the notion that substantially damaged or substantially improved structures, which must be elevated at least to the FEMA minimum, FEMA plus the town freeboard. And in here, there's language that we've been working on that says you can't exceed 35 feet. It's not clear to me whether or not that is going to be a permanent restriction or whether... I mean, I think that was our working premise, but we felt that if we get down the road and realize that people being the town commissioners in particular, were willing to relax 35 feet under in the zoning under certain circumstances, if we put 35 feet in to this, and then we want to relax that to 36 feet under certain circumstances, then we have to go through FEMA review all over again. So we want to perhaps point to a building height in that particular instance in the zoning code, and which we can change or not change as the town wants to without having to go to FEMA. I mean, so we don't want to put in things here that we think we may come back to in the next couple of years and try to readdress, because we don't want to get into a situation where we're going to have to go back to FEMA.
So we just need to reference.
I think so.
Standard.
I think so. Yeah.
Well, isn't isn't that height mentioned in here a couple times?
Well, it is, and so we will get to that.
Okay.
So I think we will take it out.
Okay.
And reference forward to the appropriate place in the code.
Okay. There's just a couple other things too. I picked
Mike
up.
Mike did this.
Yeah.
Why don't you let Mike give us the summation?
Well, I just have several areas. He merged my comments into the FEMA one and did a great job.
Who's he?
David.
Oh, yeah. You did.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so my job was to make sure that things that were existing in the code didn't get left out, because DENREC doesn't know, and FEMA doesn't know our town-specific stuff. So that's what I did.
Right.
David boiled down.
And then actually Rebecca Quinn came through, and many of my comments, and you know, and she moved some stuff around.
Okay.
And you know, addressed some of the comments that I had. And what I would like to do is just run through this point by point, as which I think a lot of the points, you know, basically comment by comment or page by page. Most of the comments I think are, you know, done.
Go.
And so. So on the first page, comment one, you know, we started with the wrong draft. So it turns out that 3 weeks ago FEMA updated their draft. So she has taken care of that for us.
Right.
That's a great catch right there.
Comment two is that she thought we dropped some things out, and so there are some comments in here about those. She provided the date of entry to us. Comment three is that it would be nice to, at the bottom of the page, to list the standards adopted, and with your blessing, I will kind of, as a secretarial function, put that in. I view this kind of as an administrative issue. Comment four is we want to look at the rest of the code to make sure that we take care of all of the conflicts and that we identify the issues of the code that are repealed. You know, again, I view that as an administrative issue. With your, you know, blessing, I will, unless somebody else wants to do that, I will do that. Comment five says that we'll, you know, get the numbering done when we do the numbering. You know, when everything is done, that this can get put in appropriate numbers. Comment six is a FEMA required change. And if any of you have issues you'd like to discuss as we're going along, please pipe up. Now, under the bottom of page two, under 1.2, there is a statement of purpose. And under this, we have added item O, which, you know, was suggested by Marty. And I added it at the end of the list.
Yeah, that's fine.
I don't know if we want to prioritize these or...
Are these in a prioritizing?
Well, these are in the Delaware DENREC order.
These...
I don't think you would... So there's no reason to change.
Okay. I mean,
at least they're recognizable.
Fine.
By somebody like Quinn, Ms. Quinn.
So then comment seven, this information goes someplace else, and she moved this to 3.3.B. Okay. So
before we get off of that paragraph, I think I understand in VE zones, you don't want to expand or enlarge a building. Is that pretty commonly accepted with the communities? You can expand or enlarge in the VE zone.
I'm sorry, you can't expand or enlarge seaward. Oh.
Located seaward or channelward of the reach. The way I'm reading it, could be wrong, doesn't say that. It says, within a VE zone, existing buildings located seaward or channelward of the reach of Mean Heights shall not be expanded or enlarged.
That's in Dewey current code, and I believe that's also in the FEMA regulations.
Okay.
Any
modification, alteration, addition, reconstruction, repair, or improvement of any kind to existing structure, the cost of which equals or exceeds 50%. I wrote myself okay. I'm sorry.
Okay. And so she made a few comments about this, one of which was we're going to remove the tracking comments. Mm-hmm. I mean, the tracking notes, because it doesn't, the structures, she scratched out structures because she said it doesn't, FEMA doesn't apply to docks and on building structures. And comment 11, to use either the January 2005 date or the FEMA adoption date, and we'll take care of that whenever we get ready to do a final.
To back up just a second, you mentioned something just a second ago about it does not apply to docks.
Right. Correct.
So the buildings, like on the end of our docks, would not be covered by this.
I believe so. Well, I don't know about the building on the end of the dock, but certainly the dock wouldn't.
Well, I realize the dock.
This says buildings.
When you said building at the end of the dock, what do you
think? We have on two of our docks.
Right.
One of them at 415 feet, we have a 10 by 12 building.
Is it a habitable building?
No, it's not.
I don't think it would apply. I would.
No, it's just a shed out there. And then we have another one on a 240 foot dock.
That doesn't seem like this is.
They're not boathouses, they're just buildings that are out.
I will ask, I don't think we have any discretion in this.
Well, this is put in red line.
But this isn't even in Dewey.
Well, that.
You really think about it.
Well, yes, this is true.
So
it's not in Dewey.
It's not in Dewey.
Let's just let it get. You're not in Dewey.
Okay.
Yeah, you can't play here.
Page 4, comment 12. Is an addition from, you know, is a FEMA requirement. Comment 13 is basically a FEMA requirement. They changed the name of the addition. We're getting into section 2, the definitions. And Rebecca Quinn has, you know, recommended some changes to the definitions. To make them more compatible with FEMA. There are some things that we have added to the definitions here, and I would propose as a administrative approach to this to remove these additions from here and stick them into section 1-16. Because these definitions presumably are specific to this chapter. And if, you know, FEMA wrote the chapter and vetted it through their lawyers, and so they've defined what they think needs to be defined. And I don't think we need to define anything that is not specifically encapsulated here. Although we may want to move these things into Chapter 1, which are definitions for the you know, the broader code, or move them into 185 for the zoning code. Unless there is something that we are adding, and you know, I will just make sure that we haven't added anything that needs to be defined. This is strictly an administrative move that you know, we can do, or we can.
Should we also consider taking some of the definitions as they've been dictated in here and moving into?
Well, that's where I was going to. That's not a bad idea.
We could do that.
Because if they're looking at construction as development.
So your thought is when we go back to reviewing definitions, we will hold that thought and we will change our definitions for the code to match the FEMA definitions. Which I assume are largely IB, International Building Code, modern.
If it's the same heading, then yes.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that makes sense.
So okay. Where are we with definitions?
We're still working on definitions.
Okay. I thought you were just going to put them into another.
Well, no, the definitions that FEMA gave us in the recommendation, I would keep.
Okay.
My proposal is that we would keep those.
Okay.
If we are wind up to add anything here that needs a definition, we will keep that definition, and then all of the rest of them will go someplace else.
I just have two definitions I will just give you some comments on.
Okay.
On the breakaway wall.
Where are you, Dave?
Page 6.
Breakaway wall, page 6.
a wall that is designed and certified by a registered design professional. Kind of leaves that open. We all assume it's either going to be an architect or a professional engineer, but I don't know, a landscape architect, I don't know if he's qualified to do it or, you know, other. I would like to add a registered architect or professional engineer should design those walls.
I agree with Mike for sure on that, if all will concur.
Architect or structural?
Professional engineer.
Architect or registered professional engineer. It's up to both of them to see if it's within their realm to do that.
Yeah.
Then the other one, for two, is page 11, substantial damage and substantial improvement.
Page 11.
Can we just stay in order so that we can just...
Well, I'm just giving... These are just definitions that I have changes with. That's all. I mean...
Okay.
Substantial damage.
I've got a question before we go.
Okay.
If we start changing this, then we've got to take it back to Rebecca, right?
Well,
they're going to review it again.
I will deal with Rebecca in the next month and see if any of these raise a flag.
And if they do,
then we will deal with
that. We're back to square one.
Well, why don't we just make a decision? If
Rebecca
disagrees, it goes back to the way it is today. Mike has real strong feelings on it. I do.
Let me kind of finish the substantial damage, substantial improvement.
Sure.
I would like to add in there somewhere that the definition of substantial improvement and substantial damage is per FEMA's design guideline or bulletins. FEMA has a bulletin for substantial improvements that you must follow. When you are assessing...
Do you have the reference for that?
I don't have the bulletin number.
I looked it up because you gave us a reference.
Right.
It was pretty explicit. I did have a question about it, though, from the building inspector's perspective. And David, you and I chatted about it last night. It had to do with somebody comes out and they're going to do some construction. Okay? They go in, they give an estimate, they start the work. Then they find out they've run into some problems. Well, how do we compensate for that when maybe you've gone over the 50% threshold at that point? The building's $100,000, contractor comes in, you know, reputable contractor comes in and says, I think I can do it for $40,000, I'm pretty sure, here's the cost, this and that. They go in, they start the work.
It turns out that a beam's rotting, and something happens.
To my understanding of FEMA's bulletin, which I listened to for 2 hours on a live webcam, the contractor must do his due diligence prior to taking the job on. He must go in there and estimate it and get accurate estimates for everything he's doing. Subcontractors, paint, everything. And that has to be in a sheet. An estimate sheet, and that's what's turned in. So if he doesn't go in there and do his job properly, he didn't do his job properly.
Well, that's I'll take issue with that only because I've run into this person.
I understand you break into a wall and you see you have more termite damage. I think FEMA works around that, and if that incident comes up, I think they are. In fact, the guy who gave the live web comment said, "We don't want to put anybody in jail. We don't want to break anybody." But you've got to have rules to start with, and I think referring to the FEMA guideline is the rule to start with.
Yeah.
And FEMA would relax that if they had to.
No, I
think if you're committing fraud, that FEMA would, if you commit fraud,
but if you show that you did your due diligence, you made inspections, and here's
your report. So we will say as per FEMA.
We'll get the
guideline bulletins.
Let me finish my thoughts because this is important to the town. The building inspector approves something at a certain point. Somebody comes out and says, hey, this is more than 50%. Where are we from the town's perspective of if we run into this? How do we investigate it? How do we correct it? Do we stop construction? Do we allow them to continue? Or do they follow the FEMA? You see what I'm saying?
I would think, though, we've got to look at, was it done in good faith?
I believe that it was done by a professional.
Uh-huh.
In good
I'm
faith,
assuming
that FEMA will say, fine.
And I think it's all
well,
somewhere is was it done in good faith?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, you may not even have to go through FEMA until you hit the 50%. Do you see what I'm saying?
Well,
You don't have to go through FEMA. You have to do it according to FEMA's bulletin, how to do it. And
even though before there, I guess maybe I'm missing the point here. There's a 50%. He comes in at 40%. He doesn't even have to worry about FEMA.
Right, he doesn't. Unless he's done prior
repairs. Just hear me out. Yeah. He doesn't have to worry about FEMA because it's going to be below the 50% threshold. He comes into the problem. The contractor says, geez, look what I found, termites. The electrical wiring was worse than I even imagined. And there's no fraud.
Well, Jim, if you're going to renovate a building, you look for termites. You look at the existing wiring. You know, I mean, it doesn't take a...
I'll give you a classic example. My own place where I had Sunrise, the cottage behind it, had the contractor come in, ran into all kinds of little issues. He comes back, he says, I got to be honest with you, I've ripped the floor out, I've gone down there. I thought the footings went further. They don't go far. They're maybe about a half a foot or a foot below that. It's not strong enough. Got to redo the footings. Completely surprised. This is a contractor that built my house.
And most people don't expect your contractor to dig down and see how deep the footings are. But they expect your contractor...
The floor was sagging.
Well, still, even the
footings. Anyway, but the point is...
But you still look at the existing wiring, when it was wired, what kind of wire is in there.
You expect all of that to be done.
And that's FEMA. FEMA expects the assessment to be done that way. They don't want a report from the contractor saying, yeah, I went in there and I looked at this and I looked at that and here's my estimate. They want a detailed...
Okay. Now I hear what you're saying, but it puts the town in an awkward position.
I think it protects the town. I think it protects the town
if you're going to go over the 50%. But it's that one area where the guy crosses the threshold. He hasn't followed FEMA standards because he didn't think he had to. The buildings inspector then has to make a judgment. You know, now you're saying it's going to go 25% more. You're going to be at a 70% threshold. You know, so somebody's
got to
make an estimate. Was he honest?
I think
this is an issue for the administrative guidelines to address that building permits for buildings and floodplains need to have an exterior professional review at some threshold, right? Yeah, building permit for anything exceeding 30% of the property value or 40%, right? Is going to have to have the, if you want to protect the town, I think that's
I have no problem with that. I just need to know that it's going to cost people.
I'll report it back to the town. In other words, the building inspector makes a decision that this is a 40% job and the guy starts doing it.
No.
If the contractor adds money to it and the homeowner pays that money, there's no way that's reported back. There's no need for that to be reported back to town hall. Town hall doesn't even know about it.
Sorry, what?
If the price raises from 40 to 55%.
No, they're supposed to come back for a final closeout. With the actual cost of construction.
But
I think that this is we can deal with this in 185 rather than dealing with it here.
Well,
and clearly FEMA is fine with
Well, FEMA's fine with it. It comes down to the brass tacks for operations. How do you make that? Now, clearly, the building inspector we're dealing with is not going to be our building inspector. It's going to be the county coming in and looking at it. And we're kind of out of the loop at that point.
No.
I'm just saying, it sounds good, but in practicality, it could be a little bit more complex.
They assume that you're doing it under your bulletin, but it isn't clear enough. In my opinion, we should
will add the bulletin number.
That it should be done according to the FEMA bulletin number.
Yeah. So are there any other comments in this section? Jim, did you have one?
Sure.
Well, my comment is it's going to be a tough area for somebody who has to build in this kind of an environment and to meet the FEMA. I guess maybe people don't understand my point that I do a renovation. I hire a contractor, I get my building permits, everybody looks at it and says, this looks good. It's less than the 50% threshold of FEMA. They come in, the building inspector says, geez, you got worse than I thought it is. Now you have to make some modifications. Now the modifications are costing more money. If now you've exceeded the 50%, and then somebody says, well, wait a minute, now you got to file FEMA guidelines. which means you maybe have to dig your foundation 3 more feet. You know.
Well, I think that.
So, again,
I think we go to the administrative issues. Your point is that if your contractor says this is going to cost you 10%, $100,000 house is going to be a $10,000 improvement, and it turns out to be a $60,000 improvement. Well,
I don't know where
that's a shocker.
You know, I think there's
You need to get rid of your contractor.
You know, I think that yes, I mean this doesn't protect you from that, but you know, I think at that point, you know, you or your contractor is you know, skating the line of you know, stupidity or ineptitude, or you know, I don't think that we as a town can protect you from that.
If it has the quality that Michael's talking about, that's going to be a very rare situation. I mean, it might go from 10 to 12,000, but it's not going to go to 60 unless.
So yes, if it's 45,000, well, maybe it's going to go to 52. So, you know, and so at, you know. In the gray area, 40%, you say, you know, if the estimate's more than 40%, you have to go through this process. Just to make sure that it's closer to 40.
These are just FEMA's guidelines that the town has to follow to get subsidized flood insurance.
Yeah.
And they have a guideline that tells you how the substantial improvements come about, how you get that number. And if you don't follow their rules, then you can be punished. I mean, you can lose subsidized insurance if you do it enough times.
But if you followed their rules and there's an honest mistake, it's an honest mistake.
And fellow FEMA basically said that.
I mean, that ain't decent.
He basically said that. They don't want to throw any towns out of the community. If it's an honest mistake, they'll work around it.
Question. I mean, how did it even come to their attention unless FEMA's involved? FEMA dollars are...
They are the towns.
Well, they may are the towns, but they're the question.
Okay. Okay, this is, it's an interesting discussion that, so moving on to section 3. We have comment 24. Who should be the town's designated floodplain administrator? And my recommendation would be that it be the town manager, who can then delegate responsibilities to the building official as or other people as appropriate. Because some of these activities I feel
what
are over the pay grade of the building
manager.
Official.
Isn't that what I said? Or designee.
Well, just town manager. Town manager always has... I mean, I'm happy to say town manager designee, but I think town manager always has the authority to designate.
I would like that in writing.
Town manager... Or designate.
Or designate.
Did you guys skip a bunch of pages?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Actually, I suspect that the... Well, I think I'd like to not have or designate, because...
Why?
As a single point of contact, you want the town manager. The town manager can delegate the various duties and responsibilities, but the floodplain administrator is the floodplain administrator. You can't have that as a revolving door. You can't delegate the position. You can delegate the duties and responsibilities.
Yeah, I mean, in your wording...
I see what you're saying.
You're looking for the town manager's signature, you're not looking for Bill Mayer's signature.
Right.
Right.
Okay, thank you. Comment page 13. So, Rebecca, comment 25. Rebecca puts this information back in here that we moved from earlier. So comment 26 is we want to insert a reference to a filing, possibly want to insert the reference to a filing fee here or elsewhere. And I think the new provision 11 in chapter 185 discusses the filing fees and things. And so we'll just point forward to that. Right, Mike, that's what you and Jim and Bill are doing?
Yeah.
David, can you back up your 20 feet? Comment 25, I'm looking at the red line. I couldn't hear you over the radio.
Yeah.
Is that section coming out, or is that red line section staying?
It's going in here. It got removed from...
Way back.
It got removed from page 3. So this was, right, yeah, I mean, this was one of the things that we're keeping from our old code. Mike put it in on page 3, and Rebecca said it belongs over here.
Okay.
Page 14, comment 27. There are a couple of places where the FEMA DENREC recommendations are for subdivisions containing less than 50 lots or containing at least 50 lots or 5 acres, you had to do something. And Mike's comment was, well, do we want to require that since Dewey isn't, you know, Dewey's so much smaller, do we want to put this triggering threshold lower? And Rebecca's comment was that basically, no, you don't want to do that. This is a FEMA requirement for a large development.
Okay.
And if you don't have any large developments, you don't have, you know, it's not a problem.
Did we jump over, trying to follow the best I can, application contents 3.4? Is that, are we on that now?
Application contents, we just went over that.
Okay, can we go back just for 1 second to the first one, site plans drawn to scale?
Right.
It's when it says site plans drawn to scale and you ask for specific information, something important is this, I would add by a registered land surveyor or professional engineer.
What page on, Mike?
Page 13.
Well, I'm on 14.
You're on 13.
Oh, 13 of yours. The red line 113.
So by a...
13, where it says site plans drawn to scale, show the nature, location, dimensions. Yeah.
By a...
registered professional land surveyor or a registered professional engineer. We don't want these things submitted by...
You don't want the land...
cartoons coming.
And do you want to designate the scale or... I mean, they'll do it at some reasonable scale.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're on page 16, and at the top, Mike added H, I, J, and K to certification or technical analyses, and Rebecca's comments were that... you know, this probably doesn't belong here, and what did you mean anyway? And
yeah, well, the, you know, basically, you know, I was just thinking of things that would bring more information, you know, to the package. So, you know, for a development, you know, we want to have their stormwater runoff and, you know what's going on in case, if they're out there regrading, suppose the house is wiped out, at least they do some regrading on site, you'd want to kind of know what they're doing. That's why I put that in there. And I was kind of thinking that Mike would be here and he could say, nah, it really don't belong there.
Where's...
See, look on page 16 of the orange stuff. G, H, I, J. I didn't see that in the list. You got all this other engineering stuff you're requiring, hydraulic engineering and all this, but we're not, they don't ask for any, you know, stormwater, erosion, sedimentation, you know, it's required for a conservation district maybe. You know, so I figured with you here, you see if you think it fits. I know you're going to ask for it somewhere else.
Yeah.
You're looking at the next item on the agenda.
I think it could fit. It's kind of like the.
So this is certifications.
Certain it might fit. It might not. It's best to have it in there.
Yeah, I mean, you know, with the new ESDs, it requires more rain gardens on property and stuff. You know,
we just went to a great seminar about the new type of paving that the pervious paving that's out now. There's great advancement in it. You know, it can be brought into the picture.
So you could, if you want to add this stuff in orange, David, and you're concerned that it might not fit on a particular job, you could say, if applicable, or leave it out. But it's up, you know, how you guys feel. I know Mike's going to catch it elsewhere on different projects, but that's regular construction. That's not a FEMA wiped out house.
I got a simple, this maybe it sounds stupid, and please bear along with my ignorance. I get wiped out. I got a 50 by 100 foot lot. I've got a floodplain area.
Yeah.
What's it going to cost me just to get all these analysis done?
Well, all these things are asking for, it's going to cost you money. It's not free.
What would this cost me?
Hydrologic and hydraulic engineering analysis of any development proposed to be located in the floodway.
Right.
Well, if you're in the floodway, you got to do that.
Yeah.
I don't think we have a floodway in town.
Yeah, we don't have
any. So this wouldn't apply to any.
Well, let's look at soil borings. Do they require that?
So if I do it, my architect would know this. In this particular area, the engineer would know that this is all required.
Yeah.
Mike.
Yeah.
They would know.
Oh, yeah.
So roughly, I mean, if take a lot in one of the AEAOs, they're wiped out, so they would have to go through this, correct? I would assume.
Yeah. Yeah.
What would it cost them just to get to the point of getting all these studies done?
$20,000.
Whatever. I don't know the answer to that. I mean, I don't know the answer. Let me just give an example. When I built my house, I had to hire a professional engineer to design the pilings that were driven in and that concrete cap. And he had assigned it as a professional engineer. I probably paid him $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, but I had to do it. I couldn't start that piling. I couldn't start my foundation without his signature. So you got
to.
You got
to think. Mine was wrapped up. I had to get a soil engineer. I had to get an architect where I built my house, and there was some other guy that had to come back in.
A structural engineer could do the evaluation once they get the soil. Down here, you don't have to do it, more or less, you don't have to do a soil evaluation. You know what's down there. You just have to design the piling.
I just wanted to get, if somebody said, well, what's all this going to cost us?
Each one adds up. I mean, to get a survey, we'd probably charge them $500. Such as you add 500 and 500 there, you'd probably call me.
So, Mike, can you and Mike
if the question
take
comes
10
up,
minutes after this, sometime in the next week, and craft, I mean... Rebecca would like to, it seems she would like to see this come in as an item 13. These additional items that you're adding,
item 13,
H, I, J, and K, as an item 13, A, B, C, D, rather than an item 12, H, I, J, K. Are you with me on page 16?
Oh, it's an item 12. you're saying add 13.
Make that a 13.
Make that a 13 and provide me with appropriate language for that.
One of us, either of us, could do that. Mike,
could you guys just circle around and sometime in the next couple of days, shoot me something?
Okay,
so,
all right.
Yeah.
We can do that.
Okay. I would like to see the wording, as was mentioned earlier, on these that we're adding, if applicable. I would like to see that. Maybe that can go in the header of the section.
Well, I think so, if applicable, because that distinguishes it from item 12.
Right.
Okay.
That would be fine with me. Item 29 is, FEMA says do it. Item 30, page 17, is... do it.
There's nothing explicit about approval.
And then under B, the new C is the red line information there up to a maximum of 3 extensions, not to exceed 180 days, is Mike Harmer's suggestion for new language there.
Let's go over that.
What page are we on now?
We're on page 17. Just above 3.6.
Yeah.
Okay. The red line stuff. It was one. The recommendation was one or more extensions for not more than 180 days whatever. And Mike set up to a maximum of 3.
So that could take you up to 2 years altogether if you went through the whole thing.
Yeah.
But rather than having it just totally open-ended,
that's fair.
Okay. Item comment 31 is a FEMA comment. Comment 32 is moving something around. Right. I mean, it's moving D up Item 33 is this issue of you don't need smaller numbers for Dewey. Item 34 on page 20 there was a sense that Mike Harmer wanted to require all houses to conform, and her comment was, how do you trigger that? And, you know, I don't know how you would trigger that.
Yeah, you know, the county supplies water and sewer, right?
Right.
Yeah, so, you know, to me, you know, the county should probably tell you what they would like to see there, because you know, your house gets flooded. I would think that they would want...
I would think if your house got flooded the first time, then you're going to have to do something to your system, and so that probably triggers an upgrade or something. And
yeah, but if I was a county, I would want backflow preventers in anywhere that could flood. You know, and a backflow preventer is going to make it so that if your house floods and my water system doesn't, things that like break right. in your house aren't going to feed contaminated water into my water system. You won't let it happen. See what I'm saying? But I don't
right,
think that's
right.
our authority. That's
but,
why that's
you know, I we don't own the water system.
Yeah.
And FEMA is happy with this.
If they're happy with it, let it ride.
And
what do you think, Mike? Just let it ride?
Yeah, you're getting into the county now.
Yeah, we're getting okay. sort of stepping over the line there.
So page, right. page 22 is a freeboard issue.
So we're taking out the orange. I just... comment 34. So we're striking the comment,
yeah.
correct?
Yes.
This is, we just talked about this just a second ago. This is the sewage system.
Yeah, no.
That's coming out.
No, we're leaving in accordance with county requirements. Oh, wait.
We're not listening to my comment. We're just going to go. They're going to have
Mike. The comment that we're ignoring is Mike Harmer's comment on making this applicable to all.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure. Is that what this?
Yeah, that's what that is.
How would you trigger this requirement?
Mike Harmer's requirement was to require
backflow preventers
on everything.
Everything that could flood, and I just so it's a comment for discussion, and we shot it down, which is.
Okay. So my question is the orange staying in?
Yes,
or
the
out?
Orange is staying in.
They can do what they did in West Virginia, they just flush lines.
The orange was the original orange.
No, that doesn't. Well, that's
Mike,
what I'm asking.
Mike Harmer
added the orange, correct?
No. The only issue here is Mike Harmer said, should we extend this to existing non-damaged systems?
Okay.
And she said no.
Okay, so then we're okay with this.
But we're okay with
it. Thank you. Sorry for my stupidity.
So, 22 introduces the notion of freeboard.
Where are you now?
Page 22, comment 35, introduces the notion of freeboard. And, I mean,
yeah.
Rebecca's comment is that, I mean, so this is basically freeboard for above ground tanks. And her point is, I believe that we should have the same freeboard for above ground tanks as we have for buildings.
Exactly. I agree with her.
So this is a good time to turn the page. And
well,
I think so everybody is...
So that means everybody's bottled...
Right now, it's mostly it's above.
I don't have propane, but
yeah, I mean propane tanks are above ground at whatever the.
Well, the requirement that triggers that insurance is it's connected to the house, and most propane tanks are connected to the house.
Right.
So when you do these elevation certificates, there's a spot on there that you have to give the elevation of the lowest machinery servicing the house, and their interpretations of a. Propane tank is if it's connected to the house, and then your insurance rates could fluctuate based on that. If your propane tank is not connected to the house, or you can you know argue that a line going through the house is not a connection, then it doesn't apply. But if it's connected to the house, with that you know, and that's the end of discussion, then it applies. And that's how the elevation certificates are filled out. That the insurance companies review to make their determination on the insurance rates. It's in section C of the elevation certificate. There's a line there that he asked for the elevation of the lowest machinery servicing the house and connected to the house.
So I think we're happy to have this be the same as the freeboard for the house.
Yeah, if you have it as a freeboard, like, you know, then the insurance company's not going to ding you, is what we're saying.
What if you do that now? If you have a propane tank that's 15 in your backyard, 15 feet away from your house, and they're running, you know, gas line to it, you've got to elevate that propane tank that's in your backyard up to the freeboard of the house. It just can't sit on the ground anymore. The propane tank.
Yeah.
So what about the line?
The line is what it is. But I'm just telling you, when you imagine the propane tank being elevated to the freeboard, so if you've got, so you've got a house in the AE zone, you build it to elevation, it's 10 feet above grade to get to the AE level, or 8 feet above grade. That propane tank that's supplying your charcoal grill on your back deck has to be 8 feet up in the air.
How do you fill it? How does it?
That's a good question. That's a good question.
Steps.
But not AE compliant. Yeah, I mean the propane tank. Okay, hey.
Does the county supersede us here? If we're accepting county and the building requirements and we're putting all this stuff, how does that fit into this?
I don't know if the county would have a code. Fire marshal might have a code on something like that.
I don't know. I'm just asking a question.
Look, I mean, every county in Delaware is adopting FEMA standards.
Yeah, but
this is the FEMA standard.
How are
you going to fill it if it's 8 feet up in the air?
Well, there's no. I mean, there's. It's not going to be 8 feet up.
There'll be no more propane tanks.
If you're doing an AE zone, and what's the elevation in town? 6 or something like that.
Well, AE 6, and so freeboard's 1. It's 7, but most of the grade is 4.
So
you're
3 feet.
You're 3 feet above.
So 4 feet, and you got your tank. It's another 6 feet.
Wow.
So 5 feet. So your tank is going to be 8 feet. You know, the filling portion of the tank could be 8 feet above grade.
Well, I mean, I know tanks that are now 4 feet above grade.
Propane tank. That can
4 feet above the ground, certainly on platforms.
Well, if you can bury it, I guess. Burying doesn't.
You know, I don't think we have any choice here.
Well, you do have a choice because I don't think FEMA. Where are we there? We're page
22.
We're page 22.
4.8.
What she's saying here is the freeboard you select for the building should be selected here. If tanks that serve buildings are lower than the lowest floor, insurance is higher. It doesn't say FEMA is not going to not going to give you insurance. It's just that if the person who is providing insurance picks up on this tank, that homeowner could get a little higher insurance if they judge it to be connected to the house. That's what it's saying.
But I think that, you know, if one is chasing after CRS points.
Can I back up on one of your earlier comments? You mentioned the hose being attached to the tank. The tank's sitting outside my building. I got a hose attached. Is that attached to my building? That line going in, does that make it attached?
When I do those elevation certificates, I say no.
Okay.
I say no. In my opinion, it's not attached.
Okay.
But there have been people who, and I do that as a professional, I'm taking that on. But I have had people who interpret the regulation and say, yes, we think it is. But that's their interpretation from Philadelphia. Baltimore might build a different interpretation, you know how it goes. But when I do that, I say no, it's not. I don't consider that the lowest machinery attached to the house.
So what you're saying is, as we currently have throughout New Orleans, no matter what the elevation of that house is, the tank is sitting on the ground level.
Right.
It's okay though.
The FEMA doesn't care.
Okay.
Your insurance company, whoever's doing the elevation certificate fills out that blank where it says the lowest machinery, and they include that propane tank as the lowest machinery, your rate could go higher. Now, how that would...
It doesn't break your FEMA insurance.
Right.
Means that
that individual's rate could go higher.
One person you might talk to about this is, I don't know if any of you have property in the Outer Banks.
But they have a situation where a lot of people have propane tanks, and David Zinsky has the property down there. And like, for instance, he had a compressor. His house is 8-10 feet off the ground. The compressor was beneath the house at 5 feet. It's machinery. So if he didn't raise his compressor up, he had to pay an additional charge for that. Yeah. But I don't know how they have propane too. I don't know how they handle that, because legitimately, if you had that situation, how would you fill it? You have to have it on your deck or something?
Okay, I will ask about this. And
but keep in mind, it's just an insurance rate.
Okay. I can see where the air conditioning unit would be a piece of machinery.
That's definitely.
But the definition of a tank, I don't think it's going to be machinery.
It's the connection to the house.
It's machinery. Connection, but it's not machinery.
So the connection has the connection to the house has to be higher, but not to the tank.
The outside unit of your heat pump is definitely the machine. We locate them all the time.
We're gonna move on. You guys can continue this discussion after the meeting. So big issue, page 23, comment 36.
Freeboard.
Okay. So freeboard.
I think we should go 4 feet freeboard because the town gets 66% discount.
I'm sorry. How many?
4 feet. The max.
Three's the max.
We already have 1 foot.
We have one.
Four in that table.
I thought the table maxed out at four.
Let's pull it out. The one where you get the 66% discount is what I'm for. I mean, you know, it's a democratic process, so don't listen to me. But I'm just saying that somewhere, where's the...
We
all got that information.
Theoretically, I agree with you, but then you can't do that without somehow looking at the 35-foot height restriction.
I mean,
they've got to be married together.
It's three. I think it says right here, the 3 foot in the table.
If that is the max, it gives you the 60%,
right?
Then I would say 3 feet, and then give in and say, if you're affected, that the height's 38 feet or whatever.
Well, that's always an issue with that.
It's
got to be married together.
That insurance rate is only applicable to that individual homeowner. It's not across the board in the tenant. So it's the homeowner's choice. Let's just say we set a 2 foot freeboard.
Right.
Okay. But they decide they're going to get a good insurance rate because we're 2 feet above the 100-year elevation. They're going to get a nice rate. But if they decide to go 4 feet, they're going to even get a better rate. But that doesn't mean the whole town's going to come down in subsidies.
So there's two things going on.
60%. If he goes
wait, Marty.
And stays below
35. Hang on. There's three things going on. One is the town's freeboard requires everybody to build to elevate up to someplace. By picking an elevation, the town gets more or less credit in the community rating system, and everybody in town who purchases insurance through the National Flood Insurance Program gets a discount. And I think if we go from 1 foot to 2 feet, that the discount will go from 10% to 15%. An individual who doesn't have a house that approaches in a setback, an individual can go higher, you know, so they've got to build at the FEMA, but they can build higher. There's nothing stopping them from going higher.
Okay.
So if I want 66% rather than 33%, I can build an extra foot. The issue gets the building envelope. If I chose to go 3 feet, you know, FEMA plus three, is my roof line still squeezed at, 35 feet? So I can't go, in principle, I can't go higher, but my roof can't go higher, but my floor, I want to go higher, and so I now have less of an envelope in which I can bill. Now, Mike Paraskevich would tell you that in a 32-foot envelope, he has built a very nice three-story house. So, you know, is there really, or, well, it actually...
AO zone.
You built a very nice house in a 28.5-foot envelope if you don't include your roof deck.
No, the roof deck is right at the 35-foot limit.
Right, but if you don't include the roof deck, your roof...
My roof is down below
is
the 35
down three and a half, is down 3.5 feet.
Right.
So and you're built 3 feet above grade.
Right, and I have a 9-foot ceiling in the third floor.
And so you've got, you know, your house is 28.5 feet from the floor on the first floor to the roof.
Right.
So, you know...
So, and that's in the AO zone. So what you're saying, Dave, that in an AO zone, you could build a nice three... In the RR zone, you could build...
And actually, in most of the AE zones, it's the numbers are the same.
Numbers are the same. Okay, you could build a three-story house and still not peek over the 35-foot limit.
So
it's
done. I mean, just as long as everybody understands how these pieces are together.
I'm only 1 foot. My freeboard's only 1 foot.
Well, so. And so the question is, do we want to increase the freeboard to 2 feet? The town does better in the CRS. Individuals can go higher if they want. People who encroach, who can go to FEMA plus the freeboard, get an extra... I mean, they don't have... At least as I read the code, they don't have the option of going higher, but they get now to build to 2. By adding a foot, are we really squeezing? Do we feel like we're squeezing people?
Let me.
If it's an existing structure, what do you
mean? I'm sorry?
If it's an existing structure, well, it's already right there, and they want to raise it.
Yeah, that deals with the people that want to become proactive.
Right, well, you know.
That's a problem. And then you've got.
But that's...
Let me just ask you, if we keep it at a freeboard of 1, and I decide I want to go a freeboard of 3 on my own, do I get a discount personally?
Yes. Insurance-wise, you would, yes.
Okay, so what's the benefit to the town?
No, the whole town does it, 2 feet, though, right?
If the town increases the freeboard, if we go from 1 to 2, we get another 125 points on our CRS score.
What does that mean to the individual person?
If we get an aggregate of 250 points from where we are now, everybody in town gets an additional 5% discount on their flood insurance. So this gets us halfway.
If they meet the freeboard. If they don't...
No. If the town says...
Somebody gets screwed down the road, though.
If the town says the freeboard is this, then, you know, that only applies to new construction.
Gotcha.
Substantial improvement, substantial damage.
Or additions.
Well, substantial improvement.
So, well, discussion
in addition to a house.
A lateral addition.
Yeah.
Somebody gets hurt no matter what we do, all right? I feel. Because if we go with 3 foot, like I'm supporting 3 foot freeboard, and I'd like higher if we could, because I don't think that we really have seen the effects of this global warming and all that, my personal opinion. So that's why I'm supporting the three foot, all right? So, or 2 foot. I'm not going to argue. I'll feel very strongly, but I'm saying I'm making my decisions so we can move forward, and we need to move this forward because we've been talking about it for so long. 3 feet, all right? And then we grandfather people who are already at that 35-foot surf club, all right, or the one on Regent Street.
Clever.
Right? The Reed Street or whatever is
the... Right, the dreaded Reed Street.
Is it the McKinney? Not McKinney's, you go down to Reed Street on the left.
Yes, Knock Harbor, the Monocle.
Yeah.
Kevin.
You got it.
Yeah.
So you might want to go higher or whatever, but, so I'm saying 3 feet, and then look at the 35 and say, if you're going to go to the 3 foot freeboard, 35, you can go to 38. You know, just admit it. You know, it's 3 feet. Let the people go higher. That's what I'm going to support here. You know, so
we understand that. We understand.
And the reason why the town would want that is because if my theory is correct, that, you know, we haven't seen really the effects of what we've done to the environment, there's going to be less abandoned houses.
I hear you.
All right. So that's why I'm supporting.
So Mike, if I take your argument there, then that would apply only to people that are already at the 35 foot limit. The new construction, where would you limit it?
I would limit it at 38. If they want to build the 3 foot.
Okay, so now we're raising the whole thing for everybody to 38 feet.
Only if you get flooded, only in a flood district. You know, because if FEMA applies.
I want to just build a new house.
If you're in a FEMA zone, one of these zones, right?
You can go to 38 feet.
You can go to 38. Okay. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. And so right. I've made the people who lose their, theoretically, they lose their view, whoever were mad at the rules, you know, they, or, you know, folks like that, they're losing, you know, they could lose their view a little more. But I think that's more important myself than, you know, having an abandoned house that you can't afford to rebuild. And that's what's going to happen probably is of my theory.
Now,
that's my position.
I got some thoughts on that. I mean, if you have new construction and whether you raise it 2 feet above the freeboard or 2 feet above, create a 2 foot freeboard or a 3 foot freeboard, the design of a new house is going to withstand a flood, whether or not withstand a flood, whether it's a 2 feet or a 3 foot freeboard.
Yeah.
So you're not going to have an abandoned house.
No,
what you're talking about is new construction.
Yeah, yeah, okay. I see what you're
saying.
Okay.
The difference between a 1 foot freeboard or a 3 foot freeboard on a new house with the proper foundation or piling that's going to be
you'll have to
put in it on a new house. It's not going to make a difference. I mean, a storm would have to wipe the house out,
right?
Or not. I don't know if I'm putting
but the, but the difference is
less
50 years from now.
You'll get
the 100-year storm is
going
to be
anchored to the foundation. All the new construction are anchoring.
We really don't.
We don't know. I mean, the expectation is in 100 years.
If the storm is that high, you're not going to be able to get down Route 1, and we don't have to worry about passes anymore. That is on the table. I'll put mine on the table.
And yours is?
Go ahead.
Stop talking about sea level rise, I'll go to 2 foot.
I would go 2 feet.
I'll go 2 feet.
Jim?
I'm looking to minimize the freeboard. I'd go 1.5 feet.
Chuck?
I'm still in favor of staying where we are at 1 foot. I can do 1.5.
That brings you back to what I had offered a few weeks ago. We have three zones in here, Pam. We have an AO zone, an AE zone, and a VE zone. I suggested the AO zone, we leave it at 1. The AE zone, we go to 2. And the VE zone, we go to 3. The VE zone is along the beaches.
Good idea.
You can't estimate how big a wave is going to be, making it go 3 foot higher to build on pilings anyhow. And most people don't put a three-story house on the beach, they go two-story. So if you have a VE zone, it's 3 feet. If you're in an AE zone, you know, you have a better chance of wave action, somewhat of a chance of wave action, not as much as a VE zone. You still got the bay flooding and some wave action, now you go to 2 feet. If you're in an AO zone like we're in, where it's just sheet flow coming down the street, there's no wave action. Once the tide goes out, your storm's over with. Leave it at 1 foot.
I'm with Mike 100%. I like that. I get
it. And that would be great with.
How does that work on existing and the new construction? Well, now that I'm talking.
Well, new construction would that it would apply to new construction.
Okay. All right, a quick question: the AE you recommend 2? Okay. Because I was just reading in the page 8 of the definition of freeboard, and it's like not just the sea rise, and it's junk floating, I'll just say, in from the bay, like wood, a boat, you know, all of which we saw
a lot of stuff from the junk from the bay.
Junk from the bay and ice jams and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's not just, you know, the bay coming up, it's debris, floating debris.
So the AO zone, which has, even though it's a flood zone, it has the less chance of getting damaged from a flood. Because it's just sheet flow. They think that the waves are going to break at the dunes, wash over, there'll be no wave action, roll on down the street, and it might get to a height of 2 feet above, and then it's gone. So leave that at a foot.
Until the next wave.
Well, till the next, you know, yeah. And then in the AE zone along the bay, where they think, you know, you're going to get the flood coming in anyway.
across all of them, or 1.5 feet across all of them, or
the 1.5?
I kind of like what you just proposed, 3, 2, and 1. I kind of like that, as long as you also increase maximum height in those areas, equivalent to
3, 2, 1 again.
Yeah.
We're not trying to give away the story here. Just be reasonable, you know, with 3, 2, 1.
So the height would start at the freeboard.
I mean, I could see, you know, it's one of these.
Where's the height from the street?
With this height issue, this height issue.
Not the freeboard.
That's right.
The height issue is, to some extent, a curious one, because if you think of the Bayside, pick a street, Rodney Street, goes from an elevation of 5 feet at Route 1 to an elevation of 2 feet at the Bay. But where you have
a ramp, it goes to zero.
Fine. Yes.
Right. Some days minus zero.
Yes. Right. But, and so your height is, as you progress, if you were to build different places along the street, your height is measured from grade, which goes from 5 feet to 2 feet. Whereas the freeboard is measured from an elevation that is fixed across the bay. I mean, fixed across the length of the street. So if you were to build from, so if you're at Route 1, you know, let's just say that FEMA plus the freeboard is 5 feet. I mean, it's not. But so your first floor would be on the ground, and you go 35 feet, 38 feet. But the person who, you know, is down by the bay is going to have to put their floor 3 feet up. And so you might want the person at the bay to get the extra 3 feet of height, but you might not want the person at Route 1 to get the extra 3 feet of height, because then they're going to get a 38-foot house rather than a 35-foot.
And you're starting to block everybody's view as they go down, which is...
And I don't know if we want to redefine how we define height in a flood zone from, you know, the FEMA plus the freeboard plus 32 feet.
Well, that's the question.
Because that would then get you, you know, that would give everybody kind of a fixed amount.
Well, FEMA's going up in each, or is it?
And as FEMA changes the flood maps, then you automatically index your height to.
Well, what is the discussion of the height of the building actually come back into the zoning, not floodplain? I mean, right now we're talking about freeboard.
It comes into the zoning.
So, and really that's where it would be regulated, not in floodplain.
Right.
So with these agreements in mind, as discussions in mind about freeboard, maybe we could jump back into zoning.
Well,
and say,
that's the next issue. About
and say, okay, now how are we going
so,
to apply
so,
that?
So, Chuck, you would be happy if we made some provisions for the people who have their building envelope squeezed by 3, 2, and 1. However, we do that in the zoning code to go 3, 2, and 1 in the floodplain.
Well, today everybody's squeezed with the one foot freeboard, and we don't give them any.
They're not squeezed by that. That's the status quo. That's been the status quo for the last 30 years.
So we're not going to change. But if we go to Mike's 1, 2, and 3, then the people that get 1, they still at 35. The people that get 2 are at 36, and the people that get 3 are at 30. Whatever.
Right.
Two,
yeah. Seven.
37.
Yeah.
So the AO,
maybe.
Wow, this is a hodgepodge.
So, I mean, you don't give them 3 feet. We don't give anybody the 1 foot.
We're already at one.
We're already at one.
Yeah, yeah. Everybody. And they're still required to be under 35 feet, so that's, we're not going to give them 36 feet.
Well, that's the question.
I understand where Marty's coming from.
I mean, it turned out that in the 90s, when I guess the town adopted the initial freeboard, I believe it's true that the code, the zoning code, chapter 185, had a provision for people in the NR district in a flood zone got an extra foot of height to accommodate for the
freeboard.
So, I mean, there is some precedent for doing that. So I think we're 3, 2, and 1 makes sense. We're going to address.
Well,
we're going to address
I'm not
heights.
Sure I'm there with you guys yet.
Well, so you're a minority. Who cares?
I don't know. What's your point?
I
really just have to think about this, though, what you're proposing. How the landscape could change, how it's going to look, and as things change, we're going to be talking different heights because the flood's never going to be. The floodplains change all the time, and the new one, we haven't seen the new floodplain map. Has that come out yet?
Yeah, we've seen the
floodplain. No, there's another one coming out in
March.
We've
seen the. It's going to be the same as the preliminary that we have now.
Are we 100% sure of that?
There, I believe there's been no challenges to it.
No, she put in a strong objection.
Did the 400-foot thing go up by foot? Is that what FEMA did in their new record?
I'm sorry, did they what?
The floodplain, the 100-year flood level, did it raise by a foot?
No, it actually lowered by a foot.
It changed.
Oh, it lowered by a foot.
Yeah, it lowered by a foot.
And it created an AE zone along the bay where there was never one.
I don't think there was AE along the bay before, was there?
Yeah, Germany.
There's a BZ. It's not clear if the BZ actually crosses any structures.
Yeah.
But it does impinge onto the... the ground.
Okay. So, but then when you build a house, though, you don't have to go up this high.
VZ. The VZ zone is 3.
VE is along the Atlantic. The VE zone, Jim, is only the oceanfront houses.
Okay, where's VZ? I don't see any VZs here.
This is the... The black line here is the land, and this white line is the Z.
It says AE.
I think it's kind of like you could say.
You got to look at the 60 inches. Need glass.
I have more. Where's the say?
This is the 30 year. Channel word of this white line is the ZE zone.
I got that one. I just think, where's this BZ?
No,
BZ. You say BZ, where is that?
It's BE.
I haven't heard of the BZ.
No, it's BZ.
Okay.
You heard me.
Are you saying E?
VE,
that's what I want to hear. I'm looking VZ.
Okay. VE basically are the oceanfront houses and the oceanfront hotels. And there's a small section along the bay they're proposing it to be.
No, it's a pretty large section on the bay. Almost all the bayside homes are going to be VE.
Well, now they're AE.
AE. So what are we saying? VE is what?
Let's say for general discussion, at the oceanfront.
Okay. VE. And what are we proposing for that?
3 feet.
No, it's not clear to me that the oceanfront are... I mean, I don't know where the VZ, AE boundary is relative to the dune line.
The VE would be the oceanfront. Now, where it stops... You'd have to interpret the map. There could be some houses that aren't in it. But if you're on the ocean and you cross that VE line, you're in VE. You could be in AO.
Well, I know. It looks like you've got a hodgepodge here of AE and AO on the ocean front.
To be one side or the other.
Yeah.
But I'm sorry, what, Jim?
You've got a hodgepodge. Some of it, you've got some small little section that's AE on the ocean, on east of Route 1. Then you've got AO, which covers maybe 5 or 6 blocks. Then you go to an AE.
But it's not a hodgepodge. It's all topographic.
Well, I'm just saying as far as the properties that would be involved in this.
But that's the risk. I mean, the risk,
but
your
my,
risk
my reason,
is...
My reasoning is if you're in VE zone, you've got the highest risk because of
and
possible wave action, which nobody can estimate. Right. So let's make that the highest to protect them. If you're in the AE zone... It's sheet flow plus some possibility of some slight wave action.
And that's that would be the 1 foot or two foot.
2 foot. Because we're increasing it from 1 to 2. But if you're in the AO zone, you're only subject to sheet flow with no wave action, and it'll recede quickly. You won't have any structural damage to your house. If your house is sitting at grade level, you might have to, dry a house out and replace a little bit of drywall.
And if you look at this chart, which I think you all have, shows how your insurance premiums depend on
whether you're in an AE or a VE zone. I mean, VE zones, they're like, you know, my five times higher.
Only, you know.
Okay, so.
I can understand conceptually what all this means, but for the individual guy that's looking at his house.
So as a straw person, we have 3, 2, and 1, depending on the zones. I will ask if we can actually do that.
Who would know that? Quinn?
Quinn, I'll ask her if, you know, there's going to be a problem with that. And we will deal with the height in the zoning code. Okay.
And Dave, don't forget also the existing. When you deal with the height, also if somebody's already at 35, you know, like Surf Club, they're in a VE, so it'd be 3 feet.
And they, right. And so we're going to have to.
No, I'm
saying. Now, the height issue. I mean, I just want people to keep. We have an ordinance that says you can only change the height by referendum. Okay. So keep that in mind. When we're talking about this is not an easy, you can just make a recommendation to town, and the town's ordinance says they can, the town commissioners can't change it. They have to go to the referendum.
Well, that's a good point.
So keep all this in mind. We're talking here, and we don't really know what impact this is really going to have.
So if the... Fine. So... A different discussion, again, about Freeport. If we cannot make accommodations for increased height,
the town height,
the 35 feet. If we can't make accommodations for 35 feet, is there?
You can make an accommodation. The person could go to Board of Adjustment. It's not a FEMA or floodplain. It's a zoning code. They can go to the Board of Adjustment and appeal their case of why they got to go higher than 35 feet. So there is a way of doing it.
Well, the only way...
More so for existing structures than... I mean, for existing... Right. Certainly for existing now, for new structures that might...
Well, anybody has the right to go to Board of Adjustment and what you're building a new house, you know, whatever.
Well, the criteria is it has to be a hardship, and so the question would be: is what's the hardship if you don't?
The hardship is FEMA says you have to build to FEMA plus 3, and
FEMA doesn't say that.
FEMA
says you got to build to the 100-year standard.
Right.
100-year flood.
The town
is saying you got to build plus 1, 2, or 3.
Right.
So okay. FEMA doesn't care if you stop at the 100-year elevation.
But I'm putting my hat as if I were on the board. So you come to me and you tell me I've got a hardship. But what's your hardship? Your house is there. You meet the standards. Well, I could get a hardship, meaning a flood.
It'd be easy for the Board of Adjustment to say no, because unless your grandmother needs that space up there, or some disabled child needs that space, there's not going to be a hardship.
Sure. Yeah, it's going to be tough for somebody. Now, the question I would have is, what if we said we kept the Freeport at 1, for purposes now, and take it to the commissioners? This is what we would suggest, though, that if we would like to take it to a higher Freeport, but there's a question about the height restriction, and if you recommend they take it to the height to do a referendum, to do it to the 3-2-1, and then if that changes, then we would come back and change this. But
You know more about the town politics than I do, but I don't think I'd want to open up that can of worms of changing the town to be.
This makes no sense at all. Then if we go to a higher Freeport.
And we're not going to make accommodations for height, then I'll withdraw.
That's my sense. I mean, what's the point here?
Exactly. I'll be back to 1 myself.
I guess I will go to 2. I mean, I would like to go to 2.
But I think Jim's suggestion, even though it's opening up a can of worms, I think it's worth exploring down the road. But I think right now...
Why can't we say we've got a critical and bring it up at the workshop? We've got a problem. And the problem is... You know, at least we see a potential problem that we'd like to raise the freeboard, but we see that this could create a problem for people if we keep the height limit 35 feet. Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing wrong with a referendum. No. I mean, the point is, if you want to go to a referendum, if somebody can explain it properly or broadly enough to the voters so that they can make a reasonable choice, that's fine. Let them vote on it.
See, but the problem is you've got a lot of people that are not in the flood zone over here that are just going to say, leave it alone.
Well, then you'd look, then
and we would say this, it seems to me this would only apply to the flood zone anyway.
Yeah. Well, then maybe
they could be in the flood zone.
If the flood zone, you can't pass it in a referendum, right? Yeah. So then you can't pass it.
But in reality, how many people are going to be affected? Because like we explained with my house, I'm in an AO zone. I got a three-story, I built it a freeboard. I got a three-story house, a 9-foot ceiling on the third floor, and I got a 4-foot deck on the top of the ceiling on the top, and I just hit 35 feet. So in an AO zone, if we left it alone, then everybody's going to still be able to do it. In an AE zone, which is basically the same as an AO zone,
except for a couple of houses down the end.
And if we increase it by a foot, you know, if you're trying to duplicate my house, maybe you don't get a deck on your roof, but you can still get a three-story house. So, you know, so it's not like, you know,
So is it fair for you to have your house with your deck, and I have my house and I can't have a deck?
Well, if you're in an AE zone, zone. You might not be able to have that. It depends.
But you could also lower your ceiling height, right? You could lower your ceiling height a little bit.
But you get punished.
You would not tear your deck off, would you?
You get punished.
No, I'm not tearing the deck off. I'm just trying to bring out, you know, real how many houses it's going to affect. I personally can let it sit at a foot and be happy. But if everybody thinks you got to raise it, then I say 3-2-1. But if you want to leave it a foot, I'm happy.
I think leave it at a foot.
Dave, do you know the answer to what is the highest point in town, and what is the lowest point in town, and what is the
difference? You're at the lowest point.
What is the? Well, I know that, but what is the highest? And do you know how many feet that difference is?
Yeah.
Because what's 35 feet in front of my house?
Some years ago, I had a...
It's different than 35 feet in front of, you know, Tim? Right. Tim's house, let's say. I think he lived in the north end or something, right?
Isn't it something
Do you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm a 35 here, but he's a 35 here.
I think
how much?
20 feet is probably pushing the...
I think somebody told me it was like 7 feet between the west end of Reed Street and the north end of Reed Street. Could it be 7 feet? Difference in height?
I'm kind of on the east end of Swede. So we're a little higher than Reed. And I believe the grade in front of my house is 12 feet.
You know, that brings... You know, Clayton, I've got the
10 feet, 12 feet.
Clayton Street, we're at 8 feet, and we're right at the corner.
So, I mean, maybe there's some kind of something in that now? I mean...
I have some questions for Rebecca, and I think we have some good discussion for our workshop with the town commissioners.
I think so.
You know, if nothing else, I personally would like to, I would like to see us increase the freeboard, even if it's only 6 inches. You know, I don't think a 6-inch, I think that there are benefits from a 6-inch increase.
Is there a discount for the whole town if there is for a 1-foot increase?
Apparently FEMA rounds off.
So,
you know, 18 inches is treated like 2 feet. So this moves the town to a discount, increased discount. You know, 6 inches isn't...
It's like green stamps.
Jesus.
I think we'll come back to this. What's not going to happen is we're not going to have the results of a referendum to increase the height before this has to go to FEMA.
Actually, the referendum would have to be done at the next election, and it would never occur this year.
Yeah.
We just have to modify it later.
Yeah.
But the question is, if we leave it the way it is, and we take it and recommend that the council go to a referendum, and we increase it, I mean, it seems to me we should be able to increase this and get the credits down the road.
Yeah.
If everybody agrees.
Down the road. Down the road. So we stick with a foot now, and then if they raise, if they go for referendum, and it allows them to adjust.
You've got to address the 35-foot level. There's no getting out of this. To do this without it, we're just, I think that's going to come up with the commissioners, and we're going to be right back where we started.
And again, I would be inclined to go, you know, at 18 inches if nothing else, because the people in, people on the bay side, they have, yeah, it's fine.
You have word adjustment.
Fine. That's fine. So the item 4, 5.2A4 says no existing structure elevated to conform with the limits of this chapter shall exceed the townwide 35-foot height limit, building height limit. And I think we just want to say that I mean, at this point, that no house, that nothing can exceed the building height limit as indicated in, you know, chapter 185, whatever, to point forward to 185, rather than embedding it in here, and we can deal with
right.
with all of these questions in 185.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Comment 39 basically is, you know, outdoor showers not an enclosure,
right.
And, you know, workshops aren't permitted, and that's all FEMA stuff. Comment 40 is a FEMA thing. Comment 41, Mike suggested putting in specific language, and... my feeling is that as written, it's tied into the International Building Code, and as the International Building Code changes, we automatically change.
Because we adopt them anyway.
And so rather than, you know, having to come back and, so comment 42, is, you know, this is a different zone, it's the, we've dealt with that. Comment 43, it was just a comment, and comment 44 was, you know, FEMA approved this, and, you know, they're happy with it, and it's... comment 45, you know, we don't have any water courses, so do we really need to deal with this? I think we could point towards the new 185 Article 11, which has to do with fees and fines and things. And
on 45?
Yeah. I mean, I think we want to add that into fees and into the admin, you know, administrative provisions. That if, you know, the town can do fees and fines, and if people don't, then the town can step in and make it happen and put a lien on the property.
The issue is that if your neighbor messes with their grading and it messes with you, if that's covered and if that's covered in elsewhere in the code, that you know there are penalties for that, then that's good. But that's why I mentioned that, and I don't know.
Okay, so you would like to add the liability for and I'll. We'll add that.
Yeah, because you see what I'm trying to do here?
No,
didn't that come up at the... That came up at the workshop.
And I think that's in the code.
And I think the county...
If the county said
that they...
I'm good, but...
Yeah.
Yeah, but I will check that.
You know
what I'm saying? What's that all about?
Well, in Newcastle County, if your neighbor messes
If you regrade your property and then flood me, you're liable for my damage.
If you flood your neighbor, it's a civil dispute. The government's not involved. That's not good because...
you cross the line there when you do that. First of all, you have to prove who caused the damage and then how much damage was caused. So you have an engineering problem and then you have a civil problem.
Right.
And that happens in Newcastle County all the time, and they basically avoid it because of that. You can't get a response from the county if you have a problem that your neighbor created from drainage. I can't tell you how many phone calls a year I get. Yeah. And I just tell them, I'm sorry, I can't help you.
Yeah.
You've got to prove conditions. You've got to prove prior to the change in grade, to the change in grade, and how it you got to prove through an engineer or someone how it caused the damage. Then you got to prove how much damage there is.
Jeez.
And you got to go to court and get that rewarded to you. So it all ends up in civil court. And you bring your case with your engineers, and the county will come in and make their testimony, but they can't award damages.
So what are you suggesting?
I'm suggesting that the town have some kind of regulation that says you basically can't grade your yard without a permit or something like that.
You know, why would that fall under floodplain?
Well, because we're under this section is deliberate authorizations of water course. So I brought up as a comment,
okay.
And if they're saying why it says deliberate changes of water course include widening, deepening, and relocating channel installation of culverts, construction of bridges, and excavation and filling of channel or water course banks. So culverts could bring it in. The intent of this is waterway. We don't really have a problem. But I started to spring up this comment for discussion that if your neighbor starts putting in culverts, could affect you. And, you know, should we say something in here? Maybe not, David. Maybe it's better in another area of the code that says if you're going to be doing any stormwater drainage improvements to your yard, the town wants to know about it. To make sure you're not screwing up the drainage for the
maybe
town.
We ought to look through the town's existing code. I just, for some reason, I've seen something about drainage to see if we've already got it.
I will.
I'll look for the drainage in the building code that we've already got. And but that came up at that thing, and the county, the guy from the county, from Sussex County, was there. And remember, they were talking about the difficulties they've had in enforcing this from Denrec, and where people have done the areas near wetlands and stuff like that, and it's changed the drainage, and he said it's just...
But I think you're prohibited from adding fill in a flood zone.
Yes, but most municipalities, governments do prohibit you from doing that, but you can get a permit. You have to go before the department or the governing body to get a permit to fill in the floodplain. And if a floodplain is a wetland, then you got to go to Corps of Engineers. Not all floodplains are wetlands.
Right.
So I don't think it's a big deal right here, David. I just wanted, you know, just people be aware that because it said culverts, I was a little paranoid.
Okay.
You know,
yeah,
because
fine.
That could affect your neighborhood. It's not as...
You know, I think if your concerns are about a drainage problem created by an adverse neighbor, then it shouldn't go in the floodplain.
Yeah, it should go somewhere else. All right. Okay. I'll go ahead and go on with that.
So page 30, comment 47, we've dealt with. This is the freeboard and height.
to death.
You know, comment 48 is that we currently allow CFI protected light switches. Do we want to keep that? I guess we allow CFI protected light. I mean, I would be inclined to just go with the FEMA requirements rather than providing an exception for GFI switches.
I'm not an electrical engineer. Don can answer that. He's still around somewhere.
No.
Maybe you ask him. None of those.
You know.
What are my comments?
And comment 49 was, you know, basically, you know, why don't we just do what FEMA does and, you know, adopt their language rather than trying to second guess?
Well, the thing is, if that was my comment, says your 101-12 allows CFI.
No, this is Rebecca's comment
right.
we currently permit apparently CFI protected light switches on a breakaway wall.
Bill, to me, I'm not an electrical engineer, but maybe Bill can answer.
I mean, you're going to have a breakaway. I mean, if the wall breaks away, then
the whole thing's breaking.
Yeah,
away.
That's true.
I mean, lights are out. You know, you're not going to have the minimum CFI switch just sitting up.
So we'll just go with FEMA. Comment 50 is mobile homes are no longer permitted use in the town of Dewey Beach. I guess we want to. Do we want to? This was my comment. Just that mobile homes are no longer permitted use, and so that's
so
fine.
Do we just leave it alone?
Yeah, I Well, Rebecca actually, I believe, somebody modified the redlined the first two sentences under D. Apparently, mobile home is no longer an appropriate term. They've all been reclassified as manufacturing housing.
Okay. So we're leaving that in,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
okay,
I think.
Good,
comment 51.
You guys had talked about more things happening in planning. I don't feel strongly it's just a comment. Is the Board of Adjustment going to have the authority over changes and variances to this code? You know, just want to make sure everybody is okay with that.
I think this chapter probably requires more time than we have for the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because my experience with variances, I don't. My question was who reviewed and prepared this? Is this kind of like standard? We got
this. Is Denver?
It's FEMA.
This is FEMA.
That's why I asked the question. I was like, you know, we don't want to have it, you know, just copy off everything because that might not fit to the town. And you guys were talking about more stuff in P&Z and not BOA. So you want BOA to make
right.
decisions on floodplain?
Well, I mean, I was going to propose adding under B that we add, you know, if there's 11 items, and I was going to add the report and a recommendation from, I mean, amongst the other things that the BOA considers is a report and a recommendation from the Planning Commission. Mm-hmm. So that kind of inserts us and then deal with all of the other stuff in 185. But I'm quite happy to, since it's now quarter four, to
most people go for a variance of any kind. You have to prove one of two things: a hardship or a mistake in the regulation or zoning. That's two baselines that they have to get into the door. Then it just opens up from that whatever their lawyer wants to bring in. You know, he can bring in precedent cases from anywhere in the state and say, well, this is how, you know, was, well, I'm jumping into the court, I'm sorry. But, you know, he can bring in precedence of what happened in the town before, or you know, just, what's a hardship? What's a mistake? He's got to prove that. But there's generally no list of those things.
See, this really is pretty specific as to what they should have to consider in a Board of Adjustment.
Well, I think we will.
Because we've
pause
got one
here.
Criteria, we've got existing criteria.
I saw it. I said, "Whoa, who wrote that?" I mean,
this is
FEMA.
This is FEMA. FEMA wrote this.
You know, and then if you appeal the Board of Adjustments variance, the Superior Court determines whether it's a hardship or that what they review is how it was presented to the Board of Adjustment on content. That's why these days you always want to bring a lawyer into the Board of Adjustment with you, because that goes on record and you can't bring anything to court.
It's not on record. Okay. So we got to be out of here by 4 o'clock. So,
I have, you know, this whole section
we will
get me quivers.
Right. Well, I mean, this was, you know, FEMA's language. And,
may I make a suggestion that we cut this out and send it to the Board of Adjustment to review as well? I mean, they need to look at this. This would be new stuff for them. They wouldn't know where to begin. Because these are not the criteria that they look at in a flood zone. This is, when you talk about shell shock, if this were somebody were to come in under this.
Well,
this is limiting their power.
It's limiting their powers.
I don't know everything,
but every time I've been involved in a Board of Adjustment hearing, we either had to prove hardship or a change or a mistake in the zoning or the regulation. Then it just opens it up.
You know, let's leave it alone. Let's surprise them.
Where's Len Reed?
Okay. Well,
your lawyer, maybe Fred Townsend.
I don't see this as limiting. I see this as kind of forcing them to consider certain things. It's their defining their due diligence.
Yeah, we can't change their charter. I mean, the Board of Adjustment does one thing, and this isn't going to affect what they do.
Well, they've got to marry that with this. Put it in.
So the people's homework is to look at this. So we're up to section 7, page 31.
I got a different. Why can't we have it go back before the Planning Commission versus the Board of Adjustment?
any change from a regulation is beyond our realm of authority. We can only recommend and make sure that we're enforcing what we have the power to do.
We don't want this to go to the commission.
No, it shouldn't. It should go to the Board of Adjustment. Okay. But there's things in here that the Board of Adjustment can't change if it's a FEMA regulation.
So,
but I like then,
so,
that's
so,
the way that I like what you put in there.
So,
okay.
Look at this. Comments, input, suggestions on this. We're going to. We have a draft for administrative provisions from Jim and Mike and Bill.
By the way, Jim did most of the work on that. Well, he has to be congratulated.
Do I have a copy of where you are?
Yes, I sent it to you.
Okay, so I will send that around, and because I don't think I posted that around.
We didn't post it. I sent it to him because I wasn't sure if we were ready.
I got it. Okay. I guess you sent me a copy.
I did send you a copy.
So, you know, dig into that, and I think I had expected it to go further than it went.
Wow.
But that's, you know, that's okay. So we're going to try and open that up some and look through that. The next meeting is August 9th, and
before we go off of that, though, Jim, didn't we conclude that we thought we should probably bring our changes or suggestions up to the commissioner's workshop? It was pretty important to do that.
Yeah, it's also in the draft notes that Mark had mentioned at the town commission meeting. That
So the next meeting is the second Saturday of August. That's the 9th. We're going to basically have two meetings. One meeting will be a public hearing related to a request for rezoning half a dozen properties on the south side of Rodney Street from RB1 to RR. And I guess I need to forward everybody copies of the letters from the applicants. And I will do that. And we will have a brief discussion about telecommunications equipment, cell phone towers, and I'll forward you some information about that. That will take about an hour and a half, total hour and a half or so. And then we're going to have about a 2-hour workshop with the town commissioners to go over things we're working on and where we are, just to make sure that they understand what we're doing and where we're going, and so that when we present things to them, that it's not just total, that they're not totally overwhelmed.
So what is the time frame? So I thought the commissioners wanted to do it at 11 o'clock.
So the commissioners want to have their meeting at 11, so that would be 11 to 1.
On the 9th?
On the 9th. And then probably the public hearing for the rezoning would be
from 1 to 3.
Well, no, because I want to have an hour's break, 2 to 4 or something.
We haven't come up with I thought we were going to try to either get the Lions Club or the, as I recall, right?
Well, this seemed fine. Todd, was there any problem in us being here?
No. Well, it's going to tie up a little bit more time, and that's the question.
Well, as long as you guys don't mind if we got to come through.
No, not at all.
You don't have a noon transition or anything like that?
It's going to be August 9th.
No, it doesn't bother us at all, just as long as we don't bother you if we got to come
in. No, not at all.
Yeah. So that's where we're, you know, that's what's going to happen.
All right. Because I thought they wanted to do it differently in a different location.
No, I mean, this is fine. This is fine.
I know it's fine for you. Yeah, it was the commissioners that made that suggestion at the meeting.
Well,
we'll come up with something.
Okay. Any other comments? Thank you. Motion?
So moved to adjourn.
All in favor? Aye. 9 of 4.